Welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by my guy.
Drew. I hate that guy.
Yes, and you are very white, indeed. Today is a very blessed day in the life of the John.
As it should be.
It is.
Blessed by the presence.
The queen herself of podcasting is on with us today, and the podfather, Rod and Karen from Black Eye Who Tips.
Please clap.
I jumped the gun. I had to get the police grab. I'm so excited.
I know what it's like. Hey, guys.
Hey.
How y'all doing?
We're honored to be here.
Mm-hmm. We're so excited to have you here. If you live under a rock, which or something, I don't know. But if you're hearing my voice, I'm sure you already know who these two wonderful people are. But they are Rod and Karen, and they are the co-hosts of the Black Guy Who Tips podcast, which is my favorite podcast, and it should be yours too. And we're so happy to have them with us again. How has your holiday been so far, guys?
Good. I can't complain.
Me either.
Lovely. Are you working this week? I mean, I know you're doing the podcast this week, but Karen, are you home from work or are you going to the office too?
Oh, today my last day. So I had like 3 days last week and 3 days this week, and I'm not seeing nobody else till the next year.
Nice.
I'm here for that.
Deuces to the white people. I love it. I love it. And since the last time I think you guys were on the show, you have a new nephew. Is that right?
Well, let's see. He's about 8 months old.
Oh, no. So maybe you had been on maybe once since then. But 8 months is good. Like, they're like a fully formed, like, little thing, and they do stuff at 8 months. You know, because sometimes, like, when they're really little, it's like, well, I mean, it just cries and it looks cute, but it's not fun. But 8 months is fun. How is it?
Sebastian is adorable. He's like a whole person and stuff. And, we've seen him a few times since he's been born, and he had some like ear infection stuff going on, which I had when I was a kid. So he got tubes put into his ear this last Tuesday, and I checked with my brother to make sure everything went okay with that, which it did. So everything's good with him. He's just so big, man. He's just so big.
I love being an aunt. Is like my favorite thing. It's so fun.
It's sweet.
You know, they go home and it's great. Yeah. So it's a good
8 months too. Is like they're gonna be mobile soon, like crawling and stuff. Like change the game.
He's crawling. He is a trooper. One thing about him, his tolerance level is really, really high. So he was like having all these ear infections and earaches, and they didn't even really know. He was like that type of child. So, you know, he cried, you know, when he hungry, he's your diaper change. But other than that, he's just a very quiet and happy baby. And being an aunt, my niece just turned 11 on Christmas. Mm. And still today, being an aunt is weird.
Mm. I'm not trying to, like, say, like, anything about anything, but we're child-free. And I thought, like, that was going to be no big deal. And I always thought, like, oh, Leslie, she's a woman. Like, at some point, like, you know, biologically, she's going to, like, regret the decision not to have kids. Nah, man, it was me. Like, 40-something years old, like, 43 years old.
Oh, Lord.
I got bit by baby fever hard.
And I was like, well, that's too bad.
Yeah, it was like, when I say bit by baby fever, Rod, like, I shit you not. Like, this is, like, man to man.
Nobody needs to hear that on the podcast.
Uh-oh.
I was for real, like, I was having, like, desires to, like, to really just be like, oops, sorry, I busted, like, sorry, like, for real, like, I was in my mind, like, I'm just gonna do it. Like, I swear to God, it was the weirdest fucking thing. Yeah, baby fever.
The rhythm method, man. Yeah,
rhythm method is like, I know
that
it.
They say white people don't have rhythm, man, but I feel like you would have found out after all that time.
Honestly, I feel like, I don't know if there's a lot of things I could do that would be, like, for real, like, not like deal breakers, but like that There's no like oops.
That's pretty unforgivable.
Yeah, it is. It's completely unforgivable.
Yeah, there's no like accident. Like
you
oops.
Can't come back from that. No.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. But you know, I've been watching this show, This Is Us, and they just had. I just watched the episode where they fell out about having kids and stuff, and it was like a big to do. But it does kind of feel like that's you know, depending on when you get married and when you meet people, you're not always like a fully formed person. I don't know that anyone's ever really a fully formed person. You know, we're always developing, and it is kind of that thing where you're like, when are we gonna have kids? Are we not? Do we both? So we both don't want to? Okay, cool. You know, and being able to accept that and not live your life for other people is a there's a strength to that. And I do love being able to provide and be cool and do stuff for my niece and nephew.
Right.
You know, Layla's at that age where you know, for me, that's when I really love kids. Like when they get to like right before teen, but after like 8 or 9, you know, they're self-sufficient enough for me to be like, oh, you can use the bathroom by yourself, but you know, they still can't drive. Like that's where I need them to be. And so she's like, and she's extremely sarcastic and funny and silly. And just I love everything about her.
Those are the golden years. You got to enjoy it before it turns into like, oh my God, Uncle Rod, you are such a dork. Like, you know?
Yeah, I hope we don't, you know, I hope it doesn't get too bad.
They don't all go that way. Know,
she loves being around me and vice versa. So
that's so great. I know you guys like you guys are reading comics together and stuff too, right?
Sometimes she reads everything. Like like when we go to a movie, if it's based off a book, she's probably read it. Like she's just super smart, man, and like really well read and funny.
Yeah, she's read like hundreds of books. I think we sat down with her. I think, I don't know, Roger wanted to say, how many books have you read? She was like, a few hundred.
Yeah, she's look just such a like
ding for that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, such an amazing person. And it's funny because like, you know, like she doesn't like smiling for pictures and stuff, but she'll make like silly faces for with pictures. So me and her have a collection of just silly faced selfies somewhere.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's wonderful. That's
my goddaughter doesn't know how to does not know how to smile.
She can't.
And like forces it, and it's like, what?
She knows how to smile. She doesn't know how to fake smile. She's not.
She doesn't know how to like smile on command, right? Yeah, she doesn't know how to like for a selfie, for like a picture, like smile. It's like, like what is that? Like, it's cute though.
And it's been like that since she was a baby. It's so funny looking at older pictures too. And all of our nieces and nephews, they're like range. My oldest nephew is 33, and my youngest niece is 12. So it's a wide range of them, and they're all these awesome ages. It's very interesting. One of our nieces just is getting her college acceptance letters. And while we were home a couple weeks ago, she got a couple, like opened them in front of the whole family at dinner and read them. And it was like this wonderful moment and everything. So it's really nice to get to experience all of that with them. But they go home, like I said. That's the critical part of the equation that works best for me. And what's been going on in Tip Nation? What's happening on the show? I mean, obviously, you guys are still like grinding like nobody's business, but you know what? It's been a pretty like amazing year for TBGWT. Like, you guys, I mean, really, you killed it. You killed the game.
Yeah, I mean, we went to a couple conferences for the first time. Yeah. AwesomeCon.
This is the most traveling we've done in a long time.
Well, this is the most traveling we've done ever for the show.
Yeah, ever for the show, yeah.
But yeah, we did AwesomeCon. We got to be on a panel in D.C. We did RevoltCon. We were on a panel in Miami.
Ballin'.
So that was really nice, man. They took care of us. It was so like first class. I hope we get invited back one day. And then
got to meet fans.
Yeah, we met so many fans, so many friends. Like, we got to meet Leslie, you know.
Yay!
We got to meet
so awesome
Arista and Kalandra, like just a ton of people, man. And so it's just been a cool year because like being able to like kind of count on the income from the show and make plans around that and get to say yes to more things. I've been trying to say yes to more stuff rather than no. Because I value my no. Lord knows I value my no. But I've been trying to say yes to more stuff and take more chances to have more fun. And it's really been rewarding this last year. Totally worth all the headache that comes along with running your own stuff.
Yeah.
Right. That's wonderful. Yeah, I just loved all the stuff that you did this year, as usual, and so much support. And so I just wanted to just give a special, like, personal thank you for all of the support you both have given to Safety Pinbox and to me.
Oh my God.
And Marissa. Like, honestly, I could cry right now, but I'm not going to.
Y'all are just, dogs, man, and y'all hearts are in the right place, man. And like, it's so difficult to navigate this world, and it's such a tightrope, and I've been stressing it for a minute. Like, I don't think anyone has all the answers, and none of us are like perfect, but I do know that, you know, people are trying to help, especially help marginalized people, and specifically Black people, and specifically Black women. People wanted to be as thankless as possible, and I just do not believe in that. Like, you should, like, we don't feel that way about any other group. Like, if somebody else is trying to come up on a business idea or even a charity, and they pull up in a Rolls Royce, we don't go, look at that. That, what a son of a bitch. You must not really want to help cure cancer. You know, we just go, that's cool. That's part of the deal. But you guys have really broken the mold. And, you know, we're so proud to know you guys.
Yeah, we really are. And I think for me personally, especially after meeting you guys and getting to really know you. I mean, because I knew you, but actually meeting kind of off mic, you know, where you can have like a personal, you know, conversation. It wasn't being recorded or anything like that. For me, being a Black woman, watching you guys do this, it actually meant a lot to me, being a Black woman. And just sitting back, and I'm just telling you my perspective, just sitting back and just watching the white tears just unnecessarily flow. And the reason why I say this is because when people start a business is a business, no matter what your business is. And when people start these foundations and these funds attached with their companies, nobody ever asks them, what are you going to do with the money? Where is it going to go? Where is it going to be? People just do it and they give. And the thing about doing a business is always optional. And the thing about the tears didn't have to be there. You optionally cried. You didn't have to do this. You didn't have to be there. You could have went on about your business. But the thing about what you do and the thing of that I love about what you do, but the downs, the kind of catch 22 about it is the people that are complaining actually do more work for you. The people that are complaining actually share, they spread the word, they post stuff, they go, and the more they talk about it, the bigger it becomes. So they're actually defeating their purpose by actually sharing and spreading the news, but they actually are doing you guys a favor. They actually are doing a lot of work for you because they're sharing it in these spaces where some of these people might not agree with them and might actually like this box and might go purchase it and decide to put in on it or decide to donate. So that's the thing that racists don't understand. Your anger, all it does is help feed me, you know? So them doing it help you guys get on a lot of platforms. And the thing is, the hate is going to come, but when you are surrounded by love, which I know y'all both are, and when you're surrounded by love, the love outweighs that hate any day of the week.
That's true.
And the thing about the hate is that the hate won't benefit them, you know, because you guys are doing this out of love. You're like, okay, I'm doing this out of love. You're going to pay me for this love because I'm not dealing with white tears for free. But it's one of those things where I feel as though you guys are doing the work and you should get paid for it. You did it. You got an LLC, company, website. You did stuff that normally takes company. People actually have 2-year, 3-year, 5-year plans before they even begin their business. You guys had a very short period of time to get this started. And that's one thing about Black women. When Black women get things going, they get things going with full force. And one, I guess, downside, quote unquote, about being a Black woman, anything a Black woman does, it's always dealt with some kind of resistance. And I don't understand that, but that's one thing about us. We are made to deal with that resistance. And that's one thing I love about you guys. You go, we knew this was going to happen, but we decided to do it anyway. Damn the consequences.
Yeah, it came so just like as a knee jerk, just like almost like you're a black woman, you open your mouth and it's like ploop, and it's gonna just, you know, without even, it was just so irritating. And then to see the shifting of the goals, and it was like first it was this, then it was that, and then just all the stuff with Pantsuit Nation, the whole thing's been absurd. Well, but
when Karen, what you were just talking about, like with the haters and like how they just spread the message even wider, and it's so true. And the thing about it being a business for Marissa and I is like we actually have reward, personal reward from this activity, that this you know, just absorbing the hate that comes. But there's such a reward for us and for other black women, like financially, monetarily, because the exposure means more for us, that it has changed even our relationship to it, and like even my reaction and thoughts to it, because I think of it so differently. Because now I can be like, well, it is good for the business, so me dealing with this, actually, like I feel like I'm getting rewarded for that, like I'm getting paid for that energy as well,
for being
like
a troll's punching bag.
Yeah, and just having to like deal with whatever that is, like there's an ends to the means, whereas before it was just like shit, I'm like getting shit on anyways, and I'm not getting paid anything for the work that I'm doing. So
and you know, I forget if it was Karen or Rod said the LLC, but that you talked about that, I think, on our other podcast or on a different show, that like, you know, people can shit on you, Leslie Mack, all day long. They can say the worst, horrible, you know, they can like literally say like death and rape threats, and there's very little recourse on any platform or anywhere. Say something wrong about Safety Pinbox LLC, and there's like, you can, you know, there's legal consequences if it's slanderous, if it's libelous, if it's not true. You know, like that's not like that's weird, but like, Jesus, Leslie Mack does not have a whole lot of protection as a black person navigating spaces like Twitter, but Safety Pinbox has a different level of it.
It's true.
Yeah. And you should be, you know, compensated for that, because the other part of it is that, you know, like you said, the harassment is going to happen either way. Mm-hmm. And it's typically not worth dealing with. And it was especially cool to see you guys get some media attention out of it, because that happens a lot for white people.
Yeah.
Whenever they have a thing. So like, if it's Gamergate and they're targeting white women, for the most part, those women end up being on your, you know, getting interviewed. They end up being on your TV. They end up, you know, all over the place. They end up all over the place. But when it's black women, a lot of times the needle does not move. You know, it just does. It's just like, oh, this thing is happening. And unless maybe some white people care about it, or unless like, you know, something salacious happens or something, like it's just not going to get that. Like it has to build to a head where it's just unignorable.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like that's the only way we've seen it work before. But this time, and I'm not downing the amount of pushback, I thought there was a lot, but this time it felt like the response to the pushback was more like affirmative, like, oh, well, let's see what these women are talking about. Like, oh, what are they, you know, what, let's get into this. Let's find out. Let's give them a space on our show or in our web page or whatever. And I thought that was pretty cool. Like, I don't know how much behind the scenes you guys had to do to get that, but at least that made it somewhat, I guess, different than the other times I've seen black women just harassed endlessly with no one even shot in a spotlight.
Yeah, they did a lot of work. I'll let her talk about it, but it was super purposeful.
Well, no, and I think like that's the blood, sweat, and tears that Marissa has paid over the last 2 years. This is what she's been able. That's what all of that harassment and the scrutiny that she's been under, all of the death threats, all of the horrible things that she has had to endure, people continue to be interested in her because of her interrupting Bernie, because these people are obsessed with that man. And I don't understand it, quite frankly, but whatever, they still continue to be. So it becomes like media becomes interested in it because, oh, it's this, you know, this mythical black woman who interrupted Bernie, not Marissa Jhené Johnson, the actual person. So a lot of that media attention is because of that, because it becomes an interesting story to them now, because here's this woman, she interrupted Bernie and now she's doing this thing. So that, you know, that's the one thing I would say about that. And so it's been really great to have some credits in that bank that have been so depleted for so long and in terms of paying all of that. And I think for Marissa, it's been really good because of that as well. And just kind of having a place to put that energy and like a purpose there to all of that. Cause it was really horrible and continues to be really, these people are just horrendous.
And I did, when I said there's a lot of like intention behind it, like the, you know, like you talk about Bernie interrupting Bernie, and like I think you guys know pretty well, like that Bernie so black, like how the narrative that the media wants to put out can almost get away from you. So the work that Leslie and Marissa, I think, did, a lot of the important work, was sort of these FAQs and sort of thinking through what and how are people going to come at this and why would they come at it and what, how are we going to do things differently. And then as the media requests came, very purposefully, again, just the they were. I don't, they're both so intelligent and so good and fast and quick on their feet that like there is no gotcha moments, that like there's no like mistakes, and it was really laid out for like, here it is, and there's not a whole lot of argument, and either it's for you and you get it, or if it's not, goodbye, like you can just shut up.
I feel like honesty is a shield of sorts. Mm-hmm. And Marissa and Leslie just are so unrepentantly like themselves that you know, it's somewhat disarming, you know, right. Where even it's like the moments where I'm sure interviewers are kind of hoping for the gotcha moment where it's like, so you guys are doing this so you get some money. It's like, yeah. You
know what I mean? Like, dude, like, were you in a living room?
Say to that when right. Someone's like, I hope I get a car. Shit. I mean,
hope I do get a car.
Listen, I, honest to God, like what you just said happened word for word verbatim in our living room. They didn't put it on the HBO bit, but like the guy that was the interviewer, Evan, was like, so you're going to get rich off this, huh? There's nothing in it. It's just a piece of paper. What is this? You making a lot of money? Like, literally.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, I hope so, man. You motherfuckers pay attention and do the work and make the world a better place while I'm at it. You know, like, are we asking this question to, you know, the Susan G. Komen Foundation?
For real.
Are we stopping the Red Cross and being like, hey, man, do you have to have the car that runs on, like, you know, premium gas? We're not doing that. Just chill out.
Even Leslie's response, she's like, so you're going to get a new car to this? And she's like, listen, I'm not going to say no that I won't get a new car. I don't know. Like, I'm not going to rule that out.
Get a new car. It can happen. Yeah, it can happen. Well, anyways, thank you guys so much for all your support. I just really appreciate it. It's meant a lot to us. So
yes, thank you.
Thank y'all, man.
Thank you. All right, let's do this. Get into it.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
So, dearly beloved, we are gathered here for worship. I'd like you to please raise and rise as you are able for Hail Mary, Sri Lanka Christmas edition. So, I am Ravindu tweeted out that a Christmas carol service in Sri Lanka printed accidentally lyrics of Tupac's Hail Mary instead of the prayer Hail Mary. It's
Google search and just clicked on the first one.
You know, I don't know how you, that's like a machine translation, like non-English, like English is a second language, like oopsie, right?
Got me.
That church would be lit though. I don't even go to church. I would go to the Hail Mary church one time at least.
But like, so the dude tweeted that this happened, but I want to know, did they really fucking all stand up and be like, Machiavelli in this, Killuminati all through your body, the blow like a 12-gauge shoddy. Like what they did during the service, like, were they like serious about it?
Well, like, here's the question. Like, they got the lyrics, but is that the music? Is that the sheet music they downloaded too? So, like, are they playing it on the organ? Like, is the choir about to come through? I just want to know.
Printed chorus, though. Like, literally, like, chorus. Come with me, Hail Mary, run quick and see, like, they yeah, treated it like a song.
Like, if you sin, are they like, let me get 3 Tupac Hail Marys?
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good. So, speaking of...
I mean, I'm just saying, like, they printed revenge is like the sweetest joy next to getting pussy.
Hey. Where's the lie? That's all I'm saying. Is the lie?
Come on now.
Fair.
If there's two people that agree, fair. Just say it again.
Oh goodness. So you guys know this octogenarian jewel thief, Doris Payne. She has a Netflix documentary. People can watch The Life and Crimes of Doris Payne. She's been stealing jewels for like the last 40 or 50 years, $2 million worth from all around the globe. Black woman. And she was arrested Tuesday at an upscale mall in suburban Atlanta for allegedly stealing a necklace. And she was on probation for her more recent, her arrest right before this, also at Atlanta Mall, where she was stealing jewelry there.
Yeah, and Chris just did a, they did an Insanity, or Movie Trailer Reviews did a whole show on that. Was it a documentary?
It is. I highly recommend the documentary. This woman is so, like, she gives no fucks about anybody.
I think it's called The Life and Crimes of Doris, what's
Payne.
Her name?
Payne. Payne. Yeah, she really doesn't give a shit about anybody.
Yeah, it was
interesting, man, because, like, I don't know if we're just celebrating her kleptomania or just, like, you know, her, like, master jewel thief status or what, but it's so, like, I don't know what lesson I'm teaching the world, but no. I'm like, steal that shit, black woman.
Have you seen the documentary?
Yeah, no. I've only read about her.
Well, I don't want to spoil it.
About a white woman. I was
she black.
Yeah, she's black.
She said she was black. I was like, what?
Yeah, I read an article on her before the documentary came out, but I actually need to go watch it.
Yeah, in the documentary, she, and I forget the story, but it's pretty clear, like, a white dude, like, did her wrong, and then for the rest of her life, like, yeah, I took that shit.
A jeweler, she was going to see a she had money. She had saved up money, and she went to a jewelry store in her little town that she lived in. It was, like, a little, like, town that she lived in. And she wanted to get a watch, so she went. She saved her money, and he was being all nice with her and, like, showing her the watch, and then a white customer walked in, and he immediately started treating her like shit because he couldn't let them see him treating her nicely like he had been before. And she was like, I'm gonna teach him a lesson. I'm gonna put this watch on, and I'm gonna wait till I get to the door and then turn around and say, haha, I still have this is like a 12 years old. And she got to the door and he still didn't say anything, and she was like, you know what, I'm taking it. And she took it, and that was it. From then on, it was like, oh, you're gonna treat me like shit, you're gonna think I'm, you know, whatever, because of my skin color, because of whatever. Mm-mm, no. And she was just like taking
traveled
shit.
The world taking shit
all over the place. Jumped off trains.
It's completely badass. I, like I said, I don't even know why it brings me such joy.
I don't know why either.
It probably shouldn't, but it just does. I feel like she's
I'm going to get my reparations one way or another.
Not just that, but like they showed her at her craft. Like, you want to talk about like black excellence. She's Octogen. Oh, she's 80-something. Her fucking sleight of hand. You couldn't see it. It was impossible. She was so fucking good. It was like, let me see this piece and that piece or this with this with that. Okay, bye. And you're like, what? Where did she hold? Holy shit, I can't believe she stole that. Like, literally.
Amazing.
Yeah, she was good. She's real good.
Shout out to Doris, and hopefully they'll keep her back on probation. In the documentary, though, the best thing about the documentary is her best friend, this other old black woman, who swears like a truck driver. She's like, she'll say shit like, I saw Doris, and I was like, what the fuck did she do now? But she's like an 85-year-old woman saying it. It's hilarious. It's really good. Highly recommended it.
All right, so next on the news, I saw this, Leslie, and I didn't actually put it in for the podcast notes, and I figured like it seems like a Japanese invention. I'm surprised it's just for
Rod loves notes. Japanese inventions.
I know.
We're going to talk about it.
This is called the Kissinger, and you can send kisses to a loved one with your iPhone. You know,
that's nice.
Yeah. Aww. Every now and then, a gadget comes along that tries to add a human touch to that bare cold metal. The Kissinger is a kiss messenger that promises to replicate your kiss to a paired device that will kiss the recipient for you. Looks like a phone dock with a silicone pad. You kiss the pad, which registers the pressure of your lips to the app. The recipient then presses his or her gadget to the lips of the cheek, while the motors under the pad push out your kiss. It's unclear how realistic it'll be, given the pad is a flat bed with a little piston under it that exert pressure, maybe like receiving a very polite peck on the cheek. You know, it seems like that. You know that.
So no tongue.
You know that old novelty in the mall with the a bunch of pins, and you'd put your hand in it and flip it upside down and be like, oh my god, with pins.
Right.
It's kind of like that, but with like less pins and on a pad. Yay.
Well, it's not ready yet, but that's probably like the prototype for the first one, and then eventually we work ourselves up to full mouths and stuff.
Yeah, so we start somewhere.
I mean, I'm just saying on the porn side, they're well past this. Like the teledildonic, they have like matching male and female like fleshlight dildo, like paired, like wireless, like connected Bluetooth gadgets where, like, you know, one partner's inserting it and then the other one's like squeezing in the same way.
You
like,
seem
they're
to know
sophisticated.
A lot about this, Drew.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gotta keep up on the technology,
oh, yeah.
Man.
Oh, yeah. They make you watch ads. They make you watch ads.
You know, that's the thing, though. Like, they're ahead of that part on porn, but they're not at the sensualness of kissing yet. So, yes. We just gotta get there.
Mm.
Slowly but surely.
Speaking of porn,
the complete experience. Pretty soon you just have a full body suit that is another person, basically.
Well, that's in what was that? That I forget the movie where they were stealing people's like visions and their experiences so they could like virtual reality for other people.
Mm. Oh, is it like an older movie?
Yeah, like and then someone killed somebody.
I've seen that.
And that was like a what do they call that, like a snuff film where you got to like see what it was like to be murdered and shit.
Oh right, what was that?
I can't remember that.
I know
movie.
What the one you're talking about though.
Yeah, maybe like that.
Yeah, I remember that movie fucked me up, man.
It was fucked up.
No, I never watched
that. Like that was my first. It was like the first POV sex scene that I ever saw.
Oh. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, essentially that's what it was, and it kept going back. Like the dude kept flashing back to being like. Imagine himself having sex or whatever, mm-hmm. And it was like, "What is this? Like,
what's happening?"
I went through the whole POV phase, like when that was like all the rage for a little bit. I was like, "Yeah, I'm here
POV.
For POV."
But
yeah,
point of view. The problem with POV porn is the people.
Fan POV.
Like my fantasy might be to have sex with someone from that point of view, but it's never to be that guy. Because that guy's always some weirdo. He's always, you know.
Girl call, talking in the background. I didn't come for you, sir.
He's always saying creepy shit, and you're just like, dude, shut up. No, no one's fantasy is to ask these questions.
Yeah, honestly, there's been, and that's, so now, like, my more recent porn genre is what they call PMV, porn music videos, because I don't, like, I've literally, there's been more than a few where you're like, you're watching it, and then they'll say something like, what? Come on. Like, that just ruined everything. Like, literally.
I feel you.
Well, then, one of my favorite genres, I don't know if this is a real genre, is porn daytime television show porn, where they're having sex and you hear Jerry or Oprah Winfrey or the news.
That's just regular.
That's amateur, but I've seen that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's regular amateur black porn where it's like the news in the background. Like it's funny though, because like,
and socks. They always have on socks.
It's always on the news. But what's weird is sometimes I'll turn the volume up to see, like, I'll be so distracted that it's not even about them having sex. I'm just trying to figure out like the time period.
Yeah, like when is it? Like, where is it? Like, do they say the weather city or something?
And don't be mad.
They do.
They're like, breaking news: fires rage in Baltimore tonight. I'm like, ooh, okay. I remember this.
Don't be mad, y'all, but you know that fucking smoke alarm's beeping.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, always. Always.
I've seen that on professional shoots. Like, studios pay for that. They rent out those vacant mansions, but those mansions apparently haven't had the smoke detectors change. And they're just having sex, and like every minute and 43 seconds, there's a beep.
I'm fucking dying because we have a dog, Beatrice, that's like, she's deaf as shit. She doesn't hear anything, but that sound, like, it just, she gets like lightning is like, for most dogs, she starts shaking and she's in the bathroom like all by herself, like, oh my God, what's going on? Because of the beep, right? So my sister-in-law and all our nieces and stuff, they're in a New York apartment and they've got multiple smoke alarms, and they'll call and I'll have the phone on speaker and everyone's like, beep the phone and my dog like freaks out and shit. So I'm saying, like, listen, the thing's beeping. Like, no, it's not. I'm like, trust me, it's beeping. We went and visit. We're there. They had, like, was it three of them beeping? Like, I couldn't believe how many were all beeping. I was like, come on.
Do they not hear them? Are they?
I think they just got used to it. They got used to it. And then we fixed all three. We literally fixed all three. And then there's a faint, like, beep from the neighbor. I swear to God.
Now, y'all gonna die in here one day. Change those.
Something. We were there and they don't notice. They're like, what do you mean? What beeping? Like that loud ass beep that just fucking went off? That beep. So this was interesting. I saw two sex shop employees fought off a robber by pelting him with dildos.
Wow. That's a real dick move.
Huh. How big were they?
Well, let's see. There's video, of course. The sex shop in question is named Lotions and Lace in San Bernardino. That's right. Two women tasked with closing up the shop earlier in the week, they fought off a masked intruder. Amy, that's one of the employees' names, she was not about to put up with shenanigans. Quote, I just thought he was trying to be funny to scare us, but then I saw the gun and I was like, really? I don't have time for this.
I'm assuming Amy was black and didn't he read it? Lotion and lace, that mean no ashy people.
No, they look both white to me in the pictures, but like, you know those white girls that are like, they hang out with dudes, like skater guys, like a little bit, like they've got piercings and their hair might be a funky color. Like these chicks, you're not fucking with these white chicks.
Well, and the throwing wasn't necessarily like attack, but more like, get out of here. Like, it wasn't like, I'm going to throw this at you and like hurt you with it. Right. But like,
it was like, bitch, like, get out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But hey, whatever it takes.
Yeah. She says, I think he was a coward coming in and trying to get over on two females and not realizing that we're pretty feisty. That was it. They're gone.
Pretty feisty.
Sounds like it was more of a deal don't.
Deal don't.
Deal don't.
Deal don't, indeed.
But he had a gun. Like, you think, I guess, if you're going to pull a gun and you're not going to use it, dildos
to the
face. You
know what, though? But, like, if you live in an area that, like, there's that things like this happen and like there's a level of like street cred that's around and they feel like they have street cred, then you'd be like offended, not scared, but you'd be like, who the fuck, how dare you
dude,
try and rob me.
And he came in fumbling like one of them small plastic bags from the grocery store that like would barely hold anything.
Yeah,
like what'd you think was at this sex shop? Like millions
prepared.
Of dollars.
Clearly he wasn't prepared.
He wasn't too smart. And how do he know that they didn't come cock and loaded? Because you know they have dildos that spit stuff at you. They both would have been shooting up the place.
You better be happy he had a batteries in there.
Come on now. He should have something for him.
And then mental genius took the mask off right outside and got caught on camera.
I took the mask off.
It's going to be one of those like robbers of the year or whatever.
Dumbest criminals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, is this a new Terry Bradshaw, Mike Tomlin, Leslie? I thought we already talked about this one.
We talked about it ourselves. We did not talk about it on the show.
Okay.
Talk about it on the show.
Okay. So, Terry Bradshaw on Mike Tomlin, great cheerleader, not a great coach, despite
racism.
It's like winning a Super Bowl and being like one of the most tenured coaches, and he's got like 100-something regular season wins. Okay, whatever. Steelers coach Mike Tomlin has won a Super Bowl, been to another, and has 101 regular season wins in 10 years. That's over 10 wins a season, y'all. Okay? If you haven't been with a team in a season in a city that sucks and is barely 9-7, 10 is good. But he has failed to impress one of the great players, Terry Bradshaw. Hall of Fame Steelers quarterback said on Fox News or Fox Sports 1 that he doesn't think much of Tomlin as a coach. I don't think he's a great coach at all, he said of Tomlin. He's a nice coach to me, and I've said this. He's really a great cheerleader guy. I don't know what he does, but I don't think that he's a great coach at all.
Like, stop right there. Like, I don't know what he does? What the fuck is that?
That's that racism is what it is.
Yeah. I checked. He's never been a coach, right?
No, Bradshaw's never been a coach.
Right.
He's known as a dumbass quarterback for a long time. Like,
and look,
it was kind of popular to be like, yeah, he's not very much of an intelligent quarterback. And he is also funny because he was one of the more controversial starters of people that started over a better black person because of racism. I was reading this book called, I think it's Fourth in a Mile, and it's a really good book, but his name came up often by black people who were like, dude, we knew when he started that it was obvious that, you know, no black quarterbacks were going to get a shot because he was trash and the dude behind him was a legitimately good player.
Dang. Well, there you go. So there's no surprise then.
Well, and,
like, my whole thing is like, what is Mike supposed to say to this shit now? He's like revered player in the city,
middle of the season.
Like, I just don't even. White people are so fucking
listen
messy.
To this.
Why are y'all like this, Drew?
Let me finish Bradshaw's fuckery. But I don't think that he's a great coach at all. His name never even pops in my mind when we think about great coaches in the NFL. Really. His name never pops in your mind. And like that you don't know what he's doing, that's doesn't like, I don't know why that makes him not a good coach. Like, I think, like, the fact that you don't know maybe is, like, a good thing. Like, he's not all out here like, hey, I do everything, like, on the book, and you can read about it here and copy the same thing. Like, I don't understand his comments. Because you don't know what he does, and because you don't think of him when you think of great coaches, therefore he must not be great.
Mm. Nah, fuck that, man. It's straight up racism, because it's not even, like, examining his words aren't, it's not even really required, because it's such a long story history of considering black people less mentally, you know, positioned to be coaches and quarterbacks and the quote unquote thinking positions. But when you look at, you know, the way that that Tomlin's career's been set up, I mean, he's been a very successful coach. His offenses have continually been like the stalwart, like they've mm-hmm. continually been there. His teams have continually been competitive. He's like, when the Steelers had Cowher, they kept him for years, even during the bad years, even the years they didn't make the playoffs and all that stuff. Like, they are a very loyal franchise. I doubt that anyone's taking Bradshaw very seriously. I doubt that the ownership is taking Bradshaw very seriously, because they have more of a long-term view. But I will always worry that a black person won't get a fair shake. So I do worry, like, he'll be the coach that they decide, yeah, you know, it's been long enough. But I sincerely hope not. And I think that they have the fortitude as a franchise to not do that. But yeah, Bradshaw sounds like a white dude that's been fortunate, that has benefited from whiteness, and now he's trying to turn around and espouse some weird sort of theory that this black man who's very successful has nothing to do with his success other than cheerleading the fucking team on, which is, you know, it's the height of white superiority complex. It's the height of it, because he wouldn't think that about Sean Payton. He wouldn't say that about Sean Payton. Nope. Tomlin's been more successful than Sean Payton, but we think of Sean Payton as an offensive genius. Yep. Why is that exactly?
Why?
Tomlin's offense is much better than the Saints offense, especially since they got rid of Jimmy Graham.
Yep.
We don't think of that. You know, that team's been injury riddled for several seasons, and they've continued to be a competitive team. Unlike, you know, the Saints, who, and I keep going back to the Saints because Sean Payton's considered such a genius.
Yep.
Unquestionable, to the point where his team has a losing record, and the big thing is, are they going to be able to keep him? Is he going to leave and get a better job?
Yep.
That's whiteness at work compared mm-hmm. to a field where, you know, blackness is always working against you and you're just a cheerleader. But push come to shove, I'll tell you this much. Let them fire him. Motherfucker, I have a job before the end of the day. I guarantee that, because he's an excellent coach and you can't beat that.
It's true. Mm-hmm. It's very true. And I also think about, like, I doubt that it would have an effect on the organization, because I do agree with you that I think Pittsburgh is very, they've been very loyal specifically, and they like stability. That's kind
they
of like,
had like three coaches, yeah, in
that's
like 100
that's
years.
Like the hallmark of them as a team and as a franchise. So I agree. I think that the risk there is pretty low, although of course it always exists. But there is a little bit of extra something about, you know, when somebody like Terry Bradshaw says this shit, now that's in the air. Now there's this just question about Mike Tomlin when it comes time to talk about Hall of Fame, when it comes time to talk about jobs post, you know, post coaching career, and what options there might be, where people start to downgrade him before even anything happened for no reason at all, because it's clear that he's very good at his job.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and it's so to, I always think about those, like, and it's deliberate. You know, it's meant to hold somebody like Mike Tomlin down when you see douchebags caping for Tony Dungy all the time, right? Because he's the right type of black person that they like. And yet we see Mike Singletary as a fucking not even offensive line offensive lineman coach.
Right.
In LA. Like, really, I'm just trying to call some things, because it's really egregious.
And they don't. And the thing that's wild is that it only takes a little bit to start the stigma.
Yep.
You know, like, you know, after this year, say next year, through some unfortunate circumstances, they go 6-10, they'll go back to this comment. Yep. Like, it's there for whenever. It could be 5 years from now, and they'll be like, well, you know, Terry Bradshaw did say, and it's a but it just gives people cover to say that. And it's also this weird trend in sports of players criticizing their own team that they're associated with once they become media people.
Right. Like to prove their integrity or something.
Yeah.
Right. And you would think Bradshaw's past that because he's been, I mean, you're not going to lose your job, dude, but they feel
also,
really
he don't have no integrity. Like, I've watched the dude. There's no integrity there.
And they feel real comfortable criticizing their team. It's like Jerome Bettis. I remember the first day he became a broadcaster, he dissed Ben Roethlisberger, like, immediately. First thing was just like, oh, yeah, he's not a good quarterback. And you're like, okay, so this is like a thing, you know. Michael Irvin's always going in on the Cowboys, like so corny.
When Barber was trying to do it for like a day and a half, that was like one of the first things he did.
About Eli Manning and about the Giants, and you're just like, and they wouldn't win a Super Bowl that year, by the way, without him. It's just so, it's like such a like corny ass thing to do, but you know, whatever, man. My hope is that everyone feels the way we feel, and they're just like, okay, that motherfucker's silly, and hopefully even some people use this to score some like I'm not racist points and like grandstand. I don't watch like much football coverage anymore, but I hope that some people are grandstanding, like, you know, no, this is an insult to a good man. I hope they're doing all that shit and he's getting it all.
Yes, I agree. Let's hope so. Well, we got this next segment. Actually, you put the topic together, so let's go, Drew.
All right, where's my
What is going on with that thing? You need to fix it.
That was on purpose.
Nah, dude. It's
no.
That's two sorries. One for here, let's see what we do. I'm personally sorry for fucking up the soundbite. Please accept my apology.
I don't. You're fired. So, five niggers a day. Video shows Oregon high school students ranting about black student enrollment.
Before we even get into it, last week was H for emphasis, and now
The Oregon City School District is investigating after a Snapchat video. Let me tell you something. Snapchat is the devil. Let me say that. Oh, it be catching these people out here in these streets. Emerged over...
Like,
really?
The word advertising, because people think... They're dumb enough to think, well, the app says that no one can see it unless you want them to. It's like, have you never seen a movie? Obviously, people are going to see this shit.
Of course they are. It's investigating a Snapchat emerged weekend of two students blasting racial slurs in a rant directed at Tom Lovell, the principal of Oregon City High School. According to the report... The video, they said, what about niggers? Someone can be heard asking in the background. Tom Lovell is a fucking nigger who arranges five niggers a day to come into the school at OCHS. Fuck him.
This gentleman apologizes for that, I take it?
Let's be clear. These are children. Okay. Just a saying. Lovell responded to the video on Twitter by saying that this was exactly the type of behavior we're trying to stop. It won't be tolerated. There will be severe consequences for this. On Monday, the school district released a statement saying that an investigation is underway and the students involved will face disciplinary action up to and possibly including expulsion. They're working on it. It was shared by Marcus Hassan, a former student at high school. Ooh, he tricked off. He said, it made me feel kind of sick because no one should be using the N-word. When I saw the video, I felt like I needed to post it because all the racist stuff that's been going around in Oregon City. And I don't think like everybody really knows what that word means and why they shouldn't be saying that. I don't know about that, Hassan. Anyways, his girlfriend was a victim of a racist backlash earlier this year after wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt to school. She later found a note at her house reading, "Go back to picking cotton, nigger, and Black Lives don't matter." She posted a picture of that on Twitter, which went viral. And back in October, the high school students planned a walkout after a photo of a white OCHS student went viral, in which students were holding a sign reading, "Welcome back to the farm, nigger." The parents of one of the students involved in the latest rant released a statement calling their son's actions deplorable. They then went on to say they wanted to apologize. This is the apology. I shall read it now. We have to grade this, guys, so pay attention. Here we go. The incredible lack of respect displayed for Principal Lovell and others in that video is deplorable. We do not condone that kind of speech or hateful message about any race, religion, gender, gender identity, or sexual orientation. We are a multiracial family of faith, and the content of that video was deeply hurtful to us as a spiritual, on a spiritual and personal level. The aberrant views expressed in that video are not consistent with the values we live by or teach our children. Our son apologizes for his role in this event and deeply regrets the part he played in disseminating that hateful message. He has never used that kind of language or expressed similar views in our presence. He knows that the language used and the opinions expressed in that video contradict everything we believe in and have taught him. He also knows he should never have been a part of that incident. A review of his limited social media forums shows that he had not engaged in hateful rhetoric prior to this event. This is in no way eliminates accountability for our son for this particular incident. By not exercising good judgment, this mistake has taught him an invaluable life lesson about the power of words and the responsibility to use your words to build a better society for all to coexist. As a family, we are supporting our son in his efforts to show his community how remorseful he is over this situation and to help repair any damage his actions have caused. His social circle includes people of all races. He recognizes that those relationships may have been irreparably damaged by his participation in the video. He never meant to hurt anyone. He understands that his actions may make it difficult for people to accept him or believe that he is sincerely sorry for his actions, but he is taking responsibility for this lapse in judgment while enduring the consequences of his wrongdoing. This incident came as a complete shock to us. We are actively involved in the lives of our children and maintain an open communication policy with both of them. There is no topic that is off limits. Rather, we encourage our children to discuss anything that comes to mind and to examine all points of view before forming an opinion while being accepting of opposing views. We apologize for our son's actions, and we want you to know that we take this incident seriously. As a result, we have made some decisions for our son that will drastically change his current social circle. He will be engaged in organizations and/or programs that promote equality and tolerance. That's the end of it. Thoughts.
What can we grade it? Zero to what?
Oh, we do it's 0 to 10.
0 to nothing's ever been higher than 4.
All right. True, yeah, true. You guys are pretty, I've listened, and you guys are pretty tough judges on apologies. Mm-hmm. You guys do not play that shit.
No, we don't.
I personally love that apology. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously they could be more detailed, you know, and I would love to revisit to make sure that these people are people of their word. You know what I mean? Because it's easy. Not that it's easy, because obviously the easiest thing is to be like, fuck it, we're white. You know what I mean? But it's, you know, and in many of these cases, especially when a child is involved, at least over the years that we've done a show, there's been so many of these, like, they're not racist. They don't have a racist bone in their body. Obviously, this is, you know, just sensitive times, and he would never, and not, you know, like, this one felt like they were appropriately ashamed of this motherfucker and disgusted by his actions. I just want to know, like, what organizations, what kind of things are they going to talk to him about, you know, before he joins anything, and what kind of, how much time is he going to be in there, and what do they mean about, like, his social circles, you know, yeah. When they talk about it's going to drastically change his social circles, because I'm not one to think that, like, obviously I don't want an abusive white person coming into, you know, a POC space and right. Just fucking it up.
Yeah.
But if the spaces are spaces that specifically handle that kind of shit, where it's like, oh, we're going to train them up good, don't even worry about it, which some spaces can, you know, do that. That's fine, you know. I just want to know what they are. I guess those are the only real questions I have.
Before you grade it, how old were these kids?
High school.
And the apology that you read was from one of the parents.
Correct.
The parents.
Yeah. I'm everything with you on that, Rod. I'm wondering if there's behavior that the kid exhibited, and the parents sort of like apologizing for this shit the kid did, and all the things you said appropriately, like mortified, and they're gonna just gonna. If I'm the parent, the apology should almost be for the thing that I did. Like, I fucked up in my raising of this child, and here's how I fucked up, and here's how I'm going to do things different. I'm going to make sure that this child is different. And the kid should apologize, but I don't know if that's like nitpicking, but
no. I think that's a valid point. I would, if those things came out of his mouth, it might feel better. Although I do think if they came out of his mouth, I'd be like, I don't trust you.
No,
and I think you're saying this until it goes away. Where right. When it comes out of a parent's mouth, I feel like, put it this way, if I fucked up, I feel like that's what my parents would do. You know what I mean?
True,
they would
true.
Make me apologize as well to be like, I'm sorry or whatever. But the shit about the corrective actions would come from them because that meant it was going to happen as opposed to if it came from me, which meant I just wanted to get out of trouble.
Yeah, you're right. They'd drag you by the collar and you'd say, I'm sorry. And then they'd pull you back and they'd say all the rest of that shit.
Yeah, my parents have done that before. Like when I fucked up and they've been like, you know, like you fight a kid or something, they take you to that person's house and it's like, now tell him you're sorry. Like, I'm sorry. It's like, listen, he's going to be washing your car for the next 2 weeks. If you need anything, you let me know. If you see him do anything, you let me know. And I, you know, and it's like, I knew I was in trouble and I knew it wasn't going away because my parents were super involved like that. And I don't know, like because of the response, I don't feel like they're parents that are the super, like we don't like casually and defensive parents. Because I don't think parents that are racist, quote unquote, that are raising racist, openly racist kids, I don't think they had the wherewithal to come up with a statement like that. I think they wouldn't care.
And they don't respond in that way, shape, manner. Yeah, a lot of times parents who actually agree or don't have a problem with their children, a lot of times my child isn't the problem. You guys are the problem. My child, you know, was influenced instead of just calling your child's actions terrible, calling your child out because you're accountable for your child as a parent. These other children, you don't give a fuck about them. You're concerned about that one right there.
Yeah, you can't hang out with them other kids no more. Right, that was it. That's what the fuck you do when you're not around here?
Right.
Right.
And especially if you are a parent, a white parent, that truly shows love and care about people of color and care about all these groups of people. And all of a sudden, you're looking at your child like, we really don't do that here. Like,
especially if you have a multicultural family.
Right. That's the thing.
Like, you think that about your cousin?
Right.
Like, you think that's cool? You think you're just going to come back to Thanksgiving? Snapchat told on your ass because you like you didn't mean for nobody to see that. That's why you were on Snapchat, because you knew that you had people in your life that would get your ass up out of there. Because I always talk about the social conditioning of white, especially white males.
Yeah.
It's to be ignorant and to be like that. But like that's their culture, is like you're fucked up if you're not like that. Oh, you're a cuck or whatever the fuck. Like you out here trying to have a social justice, motherfucker. Like, they're anti all that shit. So I do believe white males left to their own devices will socially kind of go towards that kind of bullshit. But
I mean, we've all read Lord of the Flies.
No, I have friends who like, I literally have to, like, not, like, talk him out of going down, like, the, like, men's right path, but I'm like, whoa, dude. You know?
Like, society pushes them towards that, or they push society towards that, however you want to put it. Like, their peer pressure is to be that kind of way. And I think any level of kind of privilege is like that anyway. You know, if my parents would have caught me saying something homophobic about people, and my parents would have jumped in my shit and been like, hey, listen, world, this won't happen again. I feel like that's about the best you can hope for. If I was scoring this, I'm giving it like probably an 8 out of 10. And then I'm willing to entertain adding points if they update us months later with what he's done. And then maybe let him talk.
Receipts. Maybe he should get a safety pin box. Anyways.
Someone can send it to him.
I'm just saying.
For me, I do think it was one of the better ones. A few things that I noted. One is that white people just cannot center stuff on the people that were actually harmed. Because he used the N-word. He was talking about black people. You didn't see the word black once in here, or African American, or any other like instance of that. I find that interesting. It just shows me they're super white.
They apologize to the principal.
Right. But others.
But not black people.
Right. And others. And then makes it like they're multi, I don't think they say cultural. They're a multiracial family. No specifics there. And then his social circle includes people of all races. Again, not specific there. So no, there's no specific like, hey, this was really fucked up to do to black people because that's what it was. So that's one thing that's concerning. There's a little bit too much emphasis on like how, like what happened to him as a consequence of this. Like there's a whole paragraph that's devoted just to that. And that's a little bit like, you know, y'all could have left all that out because I actually don't care about how badly he feels. Doesn't really matter in an apology. And then they could have just shortened it and just said this. Hey, look here. He did this shit. It's horrible. And it makes perfect sense for you to think he sucks. We working on it. Don't hate us. That's really what they were trying to say.
Yeah. And what would have that got you?
That apology in today's America will go over a little less than the one they gave. Like, I feel like the one they gave was a little bit TMI.
Yes, yes.
But I'll take the TMI as opposed to what, you know, as opposed to a terse, like, don't even worry about it. We got this.
We got this.
It's cool if you don't like them. Like, I need you guys to let me know what the fuck's going on in your house now because, you know, I'm privy to shit. And I'm gonna need, you know, I'm gonna need to know if, like, your house is one of them houses where, you know, my kid can come over after school, or is your house one of them houses where, you know, I'm about to see a Dixie flag outside. I need to know now.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and to Leslie's point, and to your point, Rod, like, there has to be some explanation, but that's always excuses kind of like after the fact. But what white folk, and I don't know if it's a white thing, but it seems to be an oppressor thing.
No, but that was the strength of this. Well, they didn't say there was. They're like, there's no excuse.
I hear you, but the thing that to what you're saying is that even if it's an explanation, if it's, and there has to be some, you have to give some of that, it's centering them, right? It's not saying that, like, we did this thing that was harmful to this group of people. Like, the public court of opinion needs some explanation. But so we have the seven keys: expression of regret, an explanation of what went wrong, an acknowledgement of responsibility, declaration of repentance, offer of repair, repair, request forgiveness, and then the timeliness, juxtaposition, and modality. And I think, like Leslie, on the reviews we've ever done of apologies, might be the best of those 7 points. I think the parents did a pretty good job, except 2 and 3. Explanation of what went wrong, because it's like, what are they explaining? Like, you're not explaining how you raised this kid. You're explaining how this kid.
He can really explain what went wrong. Right. Yeah. You know, I'm sure his dumb ass don't know.
Right.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he don't got the words for it. See, that's the thing. I mean, okay. He is a kid, right? I've done and said stupid shit at that age where I'm just like, I couldn't even tell you what the fuck I was thinking. I know now because I have the words for it at 40 that at 17 I would have just been like, nah, man, we was listening to Public Enemy and I said fuck crackers and that was really all I needed
and
to
that's
say.
All I had.
You know, like, right. But now that like, hopefully they're educating him to have him have the words. Like I said, I would be willing to consider adding points if they were like, and this is the programs he's in, and this is the help that he's done in this community. And now he's going to speak and tell you, like, how he fucked up and what, like, then I'd be willing to go back. Because it's not perfect, obviously.
Yeah.
But I'd be willing to go back. And I think all apologies by nature are selfish. There's no such thing as a
that's true.
Apology that doesn't center yourself to some extent because you did that shit. Right.
Yeah. You're talking about the not having the words and like, yes, like, you know, white people, why do I do? Like, when it comes to that specific epithet, right, the N-word, it's definitely like, as a white person within like white culture and growing up as a white person, white, that word carries so much. Like, you know just how painful and heavy and like taboo it is. It's almost like, I don't know, like when you first learn of the word fuck, like there's a little bit like you want to say it and it's like, oh my God, I said fuck. Oh my God, I said it. Like, you know what I mean? Like there's this weird, like as like a 5-year-old, as a 6-year-old, whenever you learn the word fuck. And like now maybe like the closest equivalent might be like cunt, right? Like, oh my God, you said cunt or you called somebody a cunt. Like it's like there's like that's this word that's got a lot of like oomph and weight to it. And because of that behind it, white people, it's like a game of like, I don't know, like verbal, like, Like, damn. Yeah, like verbal chicken. It literally is. Like, I'm going to fucking say it, and ooh, you said it, and now they're going to say it. And, like, you know, I'm speaking for my own life.
I definitely understand. As a cishet man, I definitely grew up where it was okay to call people, like, homophobic slurs. I just literally never did, but I think it's because I was not cool enough. Not it's not like I was such a better person. Just if I would have been around people that said that shit all the time, I probably would have done it because I was impressionable and stupid. I just wasn't hanging out with those people.
Maybe that's my luck. I was really unpopular.
yeah, right? Like, sometimes people are like, man, you think you're so woke. I'm like, I don't know, man. If you spend enough time on the outside of society, you start looking at people and being like, people ain't shit, you know? In a bunch of different ways. But yeah, at any rate, man, it does feel like there's like white dudes are socialized into this shit, and I don't even know that he'll have the words for it. Probably not now. He got caught. He didn't confess, you know what yeah. I mean? So I don't know. I like the apology but mostly because we live in a world of so many bad, unrepentant racists.
Right.
So it's true. Like the bar is so it's fucking so low.
That was exactly what I was going to ready to say. The bar is so goddamn low with apologies. People shoot us in the streets and you don't even get a bat of the eye.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things where, you know, you look that you get a simple police stop, you're liable to die. You know, you actually go get into jail, you're liable to die, you know. So it's just one of those things, and you don't even get I'm sorry, you don't get an investigation. You know, they have it now where you can actually record somebody's death and they won't even put the person in jail. So for me, the standard is so goddamn low till I'm like, you know what, you did all right.
Yeah. What would you give it, Karen?
Yeah, Karen, what's your number? Yeah.
For me, yeah, about an 8 or maybe a 9. And my thing is, I would want to check back a year from now to see what progress has been made.
Mm, yeah.
And from then, I would subtract the minus points. I do agree with a lot of points that you guys made up, but I also do agree that when, like Roger said, when you do apologize, you almost make yourself the center of attention because it's about your actions too, and also about the offense that you did.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things where I do think that they did center it too much around them,
mm-hmm.
but you almost had to, in my opinion, in this situation. But you also could have specifically said black people, said African American, talked about the principal, talked about the people you offended,
right.
Used more, been more detailed about the situation. But I do think that, in my personal opinion, I think it was sincere. I think when I look at apologies, I look at the sincerity of them. That matters a lot to me. And to me, because I think that these parents are really like, boy, you fucked up. You know, versus what we normally get, my baby ain't that bad.
You know, the thing I am wondering though is like how much I don't know how to put it, but just like how much are they like willing to invest in this? Because like I said, I would love to see, because there's been times where people fucked up and it's because that fuck up that they became aware of the world
and a better person
right. So I'd be willing to, I want to know how much time, because like it's easy to be embarrassed right now for your family, but like in 2 weeks will it wear off and you realize the world didn't change much, and right. You know what, driving to the urban center in town is 30 minutes, you know, like what is, like, I want to know.
Or we're still, Rod. What if it's an entire charade? What if it's like we're just right. Going to say all this shit and then like, all right, Jimmy, you fucking dummy, just don't fucking get caught now. Like, yeah, you know what I'm saying?
You know, that's where like social, you know, pressure is supposed to kick in. You know, that's where like his neighbors and the people in that community are supposed to hold them accountable. Supposed to be like, look, we don't know if we can trust you. What is your son doing? Like, and that's where we as members of society are able to exert ourselves. You know, we always talk about that in movement spaces, like, you know, you do what you can wherever you can. And that's part of it, is like, you know, this concept of like community and safety beyond just policing is part of this. It's part of a communal living where it's like, okay, well, you fucked up, you harmed the community, so we as a community are going to hold you accountable, and we want to know what your son is doing, and we want to talk about what programs he's in and what he's learning, because it could benefit all of us. And so you know that you can't just say shit and not do it. So yeah,
like, and like, I think the other reason I'm kind of being lenient towards them is because I know that it wasn't just like a PR firm or some shit, or right, you know what I mean? Like, damn, y'all came up with this, y'all really thought about this. Like, I'm kind of impressed. And now I, like I said, I just need you guys to follow through, and you guys will be the first person to ever get a 10 out of 10 from me. Don't follow through and it's back to fuck y'all. Y'all go all the way to zero.
Yes.
Because that's a terrible, yeah, you didn't mean shit.
Yep. Yeah. It's true.
You know, I started at like 7, but I feel like in a true recently retired NFL shitting on your own team fashion, I'm going to have to knock it down to 6, maybe even like 5.5, because y'all have been so, you talk about how low the white bar is.
I give it a 5.
Yeah, I'm like 5.5, 6.
Well, you guys are.
But we're tough, though.
We are.
We're very tough.
You guys are notoriously tough judges. I kind of love it, because every time y'all do this segment, when I'm listening in the car or whatever, I'm always like, oh, that's okay. Well, maybe that's like a 7 or so. You know, when it's like someone that tried, I'm like, that's pretty. And then you're like, that's a 2. And he's like, 10 things wrong with that. And I'm like, damn, them 10 things, what's wrong with it, though?
You know, on some level, I ain't gonna lie. Like, the I assume this is the mom. I when you were reading that, Leslie, I was reading
mom's
voice.
Well, I was doing
voice.
My white mom voice.
It felt like mom. It really did. I don't think it felt like dad, because dad would have been like, he's a dummy, but we're gonna handle it. Like, it would have been like, this is mom talking, but she's like,
whoever does that, like, their Facebook page probably got like Black Lives Matter on it or something. Like,
yes.
Oh yeah.
They're definitely wearing a safety pin for sure. or a paperclip. They may have one of Rod's paperclips by now.
They, so. My paperclip box. We'll see. No, if they have my paperclip box, the apology wouldn't be that good. Keep in mind, it's just a paperclip in a box, and there's no instructions. You know, I just want to get all credit for Black.
When we're listening to the podcast, where you're talking about your paperclip and the old Microsoft, the little, you know, clip with the eyes. Yeah. And I don't know why, like, every time like you were talking about people doing fucked up shit, I felt like that thing would just pop up. Like, no. Like, he wouldn't even have any. He wouldn't even have any help. He'd just be like, no,
shit, mate, shit.
No, you ain't gonna do that. No, he just like has condemnation. The paperclip comes up, yeah, like, you gonna do that?
Right, clip just shows up. Like, close your browser.
Just closes his eyes and goes like, bows his head.
Yeah. Damn. He has like a weed habit now, and he can't quite deal with anything. You know, problems. He's got problems.
Well, let's do it. More good news.
Also involving Snapchat.
Ah, oh, fuck this goddamn fucking thing. What the fuck? I swear to God. Now it won't stop. I swear to God.
Fired.
It's Ricky. I'm a, this jingle palette, honest to God.
It's the trap music version.
Mix. Mm-hmm.
We'll try one more time. So now here comes, the ads gonna start playing.
How come it's always like on the beat though? It never like does the middle because of the sentence.
Because it hates us.
No, I think it's funny. It's like has a sense of humor. It's very.
You know, it doesn't like when I move it from one monitor to the other. It like it gets upset.
Oh, but
so should I play? I haven't played the audio. Should I let this audio play?
Let's see. I don't know. You're doing it.
Well, I'm gonna see what happens. An NYPD officer suspended for a Snapchat post.
Snapchat. I think you can just read it.
Are they going to show it? I'm trying to let it play.
No, you don't need to let it play. Please don't.
All right. Well, now the page is frozen. But waking up with a gun to her face, handcuffed along with her family, and having the incident posted on Snapchat was not how Kimberly Santiago expected to start the morning. That's kind of a fucked up way of getting woke up. Santiago, 28, of Brooklyn, New York, claimed police broke into her mother's third floor apartment in Brownsville on Thursday, December 22nd at 6:30 a.m., forced her and 6 other family members out of bed and pointed guns at them and placed them in handcuffs in the living room. She said the reason police gave them for the lockdown was so no one will go crazy or act up, while the officers who arrived with a search warrant searched the place. The police department has not named the officer, but said the officer involved has been suspended and the incident is under internal review. Santiago said the family was handcuffed for 3 hours while an officer who watched them took pictures and allegedly posted them to Snapchat. A friend later sent the photos after she saw them on the app, and one was titled, "Merry Christmas, it's the NYPD. Warrant sweeps, it's still a party," shaking my head. Santiago recalled seeing the officer on his phone, but was surprised and outraged to learn that he was taking pictures and posting them. "Who would think an officer is going to do that?" she told CNN. And then there's some pictures of her fucking apartment, like, you know what they do when they search for a warrant, they, like, trash the thing. But that's not, I want to say, like, new. When we were in Philadelphia, we were protesting at the police department for Brandon Tate Brown, and officer did the exact same fucking thing. Literally is on Instagram, like, posting, like, "Look at these idiots," like, of all of us right in front of the police department. And then they came and took him inside. But the fuck, man.
Yeah, surveillance says these cops ain't shit. Seriously.
They just don't care. They're just, they have dehumanized black people and people of color.
They've just
so
dehumanized people. Like, literally, yeah. this reverence that we societally have allowed for this job, right? It's unconscionable. And also, it just increasingly has absolutely no common sense whatsoever. Like, it's baffling that people cling to it. Like, I get why the cops do, but why the rest of us do is just, I don't get it.
I'd be interested for a study someone could do of, like, every minute of every entertainment media, right? Television, movie, everything that's ever been produced. And then how much of that as a percentage is cop related, and how many cops as a percentage of our population are really there? Like, cops can't be but like 2%, if that, of the actual population, 1%. Yet our entertainment media is like 9% cop related. Mm. We love cops.
We do. And if not, yeah, cops, I mean,
it depends on who you are.
Yeah, I just don't even like, it's so weird because I don't think I know anybody that, like, literally hates all cops. I don't, but it's kind of like that privilege shit where any level of critique is an attack on us.
Yeah.
And it's that shit that makes me so furious, you know? Like, I think just like any other public office or position that people hold, when we're critical of teachers, that's fine. When we're critical of the MTA, that's fine. You can be critical of any other public office, but it's like the one with the ability to literally kill you is the one that is, like, the most sensitive and has the most power. And it's just a recipe for animosity within our community, man. So,
wouldn't you, if I told you, like, independent of what the job is, that I've got this job, it's this thing, and, you know, all these different things, and at the end of the day, you might have to kill a 12-year-old. Like, wouldn't you be like, whoa, I want some more training. I want some accountability. Like, this is, like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? Like, at least me. I don't want the keys to the safe, right? Like, when someone's like, oh, like, place got robbed, Drew had the keys to the safe. Like, no, thank you. Like, I don't want that.
And the thing is, if you had the keys to the safe at a bank, there's like 12 different things that have to happen for you to be able to open that vault.
Yes.
Like with a police officer, it's like you kill somebody and there's just no checks and balances. It's just like, none. We will defend you. It doesn't really matter what happened. We got your back, dog. Don't even worry about it.
Yep.
And then to top it off, I guess it's even scarier because, you know, even when we have everything kind of go, quote unquote, right, you know, like South Carolina, you still have officers that are like incapable of being convicted of this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, we think about this construct of, like, policing, generally speaking. You know, I think most people, if you ask, like, oh, I hear this all the time when I talk about being an abolitionist when it comes to prison and policing. And they're like, well, what will we do? What's going to happen with all of the violence? And we need people to protect us. But it's like the numbers just don't back it up. You know, police spend about 10% of their time actually dealing with violent crimes. And the things they do to deal with violent crimes don't actually assuage the circumstances that lead people to commit violent crimes. So it's not only a very small amount of what they do, it's incredibly ineffective. So it just doesn't actually make sense. The majority of the things that they spend their time doing are things that communities can do, that which is handling, you know, misdemeanor level violations of policy, procedure, and regulations that have been put into place by law. none of it makes any sense, much less the drain, the financial drain in our communities that go into policing. It's across the board, just the worst institution in our communities. And we could do so much better, and we deserve so much better.
I'm honestly waiting for me the like the zeitgeist moment, the like, okay, things have definitely shifted and are moving in a direction, when a large municipality, more than a few thousand, 10, 15, 20, 50,000 people, a large municipality is like, you know what? We just don't want policing. I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to have community advocates. We're going to do something different, and it's just not going to be modern policing. And it'll happen.
That would be so radical. I don't have enough hope for America that would ever happen. I don't believe in this country in that kind of way.
It'll take a long time, but I think
I watched the documentary. Have you guys ever seen the documentary Demolition Man?
Yes.
Yes. Where, like, it's the ultimate like right wing conspiracy theory of police run amok, and the police are just such, you know, punk asses that you can just like roll up and start cussing, and they'll throw a demerit at you, and then they don't even have guns. They're so unprepared and shit like that. And one black man with a Chris Brown haircut can like completely destroy the future by himself. And it's like that paranoia is so real in people. Like, yeah, they really do believe that that's, you know, going to happen, that we're like as long as America's run by a bunch of fear-mongering, bigoted, scared people, which is what it really was founded on, the ultimate paranoia, like, we're never going to be better than this, man. Like, listen, you know what I mean?
We just got President-elect Trump. We are 6 months away from wiping our ass with shells.
Yeah, we're never going to be better than what we, like, at least not when I die. I just don't have enough hope that we'll ever be better than this, because you know, we pretty much were founded on double crossing England. Like, we were like, everything about this country is so just like
shady.
It's so shady.
It's so like, shady. All of it is shady. And like, the shadiest part of it, in my opinion, is the complete inability to admit that it's shady. It's right. That is the thing about it. It's like, look, plenty of entities in history and in modern day have had fucked up beginnings. But you know what they are able to do? Reconcile those beginnings by at least admitting that they were fucked up. Yeah. And we can't even do that.
I have, like, again, friends, you know, people I'm close with, people that are, you know, in my life, and they're close. I'm like, you know, don't you think this, you know, Russian and hacking, you know, I haven't heard you say much. And you're like, you know what? Like, honestly, like, what leg do we have to stand on? Like, we put puppet dictators, and like, we've fucked with more elections worldwide than like any government in the history of fucking governments. Like, did it probably happen? Yeah. Is it a bad thing? Sure. But like, am I going to be like morally outraged about it? No. Come on.
No. And are you going to, you personally might be able to be personally outraged, but you can't say we as a country can be. That's the thing.
It's wild because, like, more than anything else, because I mean, obviously, you know, because he's a human being, they're, you know, everyone's flawed and shit. But like, more than anything else, I felt like Colin Kaepernick resonated with the pulse of America and was able to like get at the heart of our hypocrisy because of that national anthem.
Yeah.
Like, it was that more than anything else he's ever done or said. It became, after that point, it was just looking for things to discredit him, because you can't discredit his point of our country is so fundamentally fucked up and flawed. There's no reason we should be celebrating this national anthem when we know it's the grandest delusion that we have. And it was that struck at the core. Like, it was so much other shit he said and done that honestly, it's been inconsequential to the fact that he won't stand for the national anthem. And it really just like completely struck a nerve. And I think that kind of is the same thing goes for like policing, the same thing goes for the military, same thing goes for our politics. It's like the second that you go, well, actually, we're not above this, is when everybody goes, no, that's the one thing we can't have, you know? Like, it's okay for you to say that you're disappointed with the way the election turned out, but you can't say people willfully, purposely voted for someone's racism. That's the one thing we can't have, is, you know, taking the facade down.
Yep.
Yeah. What was the Frederick Douglass's 4th of July speech?
Yeah,
was it 1852?
Yeah.
Same, you know, literally like, oh, you're going to invite me to talk on the 4th of July. Oh, okay. Let's really talk. You know, like this
he
brought
that shit all the way down. He's like, what? It literally starts off all pondering, like, what is the 4th of July to a Negro? Like, yeah, bitch, let's talk about what it is to a Negro for sure. Mm. Yeah, that speech is dope.
Yeah.
Speaking of. Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Where's my...
That's you, Drew. You really off tonight. Let me tell you something. You
bullied in school.
Oh, wait a second. Wait.
Fucking white.
That's for me.
White people. I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
Hey. Hey.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. White people.
God damn it. Fucking white people.
A Florida woman screaming racial slurs aims gun's laser pointer at black McDonald's customer. Mm. Oh, Florida. A Florida woman was arrested for allegedly pointing a gun at people inside a McDonald's restaurant. 47-year-old Charles Daniels, yes, that's her name, that's his name, was said that he was going in to have lunch at the restaurant on Friday when 55-year-old Mary Ullman began honking at him and yelling racial slurs. Quote, she was racial slurs this and that. My grandfather didn't raise us that way, so I overlooked it, Daniels said. He said he ignored the suspect, but noticed a red dot from a gun's laser pointer on his shoulder as he walked into the restaurant. As I got ready to walk in, I saw a red beam on my shoulder. I looked, and she had pointed her gun at me. Two employees working McDonald's drive-thru also said that Ullman pointed the gun's laser at them. Am I going to be all right and everybody else? What about everybody else? When she started pointing through the drive-thru window, Daniels explained. Police later found her stopped at a traffic light. The gun she used was found inside the vehicle. Officers drove her back to McDonald's, where she was identified by the witnesses. She was charged with aggravated assault with intent to commit a felony. Literally. Honestly, that's why I'm getting a gun.
Because if people like this...
Yes, because listen, I'm going to pull a gun right back out and see what this bitch would say to me then. I swear, like literally, it pains me because where we live... 3 out of 4 people voted for this fucker, right? Every one of these white folks I look at, I'm like, you ain't shit. You for sure ain't shit. You definitely ain't shit. And you look like you ain't shit. So I don't trust any of them.
You know how like you always hear the actual facts that white people are more likely to have contraband, yet black people are more often stopped and frisked.
Mm.
So this is McDonald's and a white person with a gun, right? Remember when me and mom were in the McDonald's and she said about black people having guns? She was way wrong.
Yeah, I've been straight up like enjoying the fruits of white people's labor and voting in Trump because, like, when I play basketball at lunch and there's like white dudes in there, I'll legitimately just say they all voted for Trump. Like, I don't care.
They probably did. There's not
they always get like super like insulted, but I'm like, listen, there's a 90% chance you voted for Trump if you voted.
Yep.
So, like, I feel pretty comfortable throwing this in your face. And y'all just got to deal with it. Like it's a lot of y'all that's cool with people, but in that voting booth, you're not. So,
I mean, truthfully, I don't know what happened with Drew in the booth. I just want to say that because I'm a little skeptical.
Really?
I did grill him afterwards.
90% chance.
At the time, I felt good about his responses, but now I'm like, wait a second.
Really?
can't dismiss anybody, guys.
Really?
You are very white guy and
really
just saying.
You're gonna go that way? You're gonna fucking do me like that.
You gonna do me like this stuff?
No. Hey, listen, I got an entire palette of stuff for you, Leslie.
Yeah, don't start. So
people like that are so crazy though, because they're just like, I live in a world where only I have a gun. You know what I mean? It's like
I'm the only one.
What do you got? Where did you grow up, man? You can get fucking killed for that.
Yeah, go ahead, Karen.
Oh no, my motto is don't let your president get your ass whooped. I will say that and I will continue to say that because for some reason people are just so proud. They angrily proud. This confused the hell out of me. When Obama won, people were happy and cheering. They won and they still mad. Like you won and you still want justification? Nah, this shit is racist.
And sore winners. Literally sore winners.
Because just like their leader, their president, they thought this would make them cool. They really did. They thought that winning would mean that everybody would stop looking at them like they're a piece of shit. And it didn't, because they're still pieces of shit. And that's right. What they're angry about.
Stop implying I'm a racist.
And one more thing, on the low, people ain't been paying attention, but niggas been buying guns. Like, yep. Black folks have been going and getting their licenses and going to the shooting range like never before. So you mess around and pull a BB gun out on the wrong one, you might get some lead in your ass.
Yeah, I'm a little worried because I still feel like gun ownership rights don't actually apply to us. But,
no, they don't.
But you know what? You got to go out there and take your rights, dog. Like, it just is what it is, man. We're in enemy territory.
Yeah.
If it's a me or you situation, I'll take the consequences if that's where it has to be. And I don't trust these people. And I do think that any moment my safety could be in jeopardy. Like, I believe that here.
Yeah,
so.
For sure. It's just, you know, like, I don't know if you guys were listening to our show back in the day, but we had Mr. Span on and he talked about how a guy who's a licensed gun owner, he was in Chicago, I think, to visit his aunt.
Yes.
And essentially they ran his plate, realized he was a gun owner from Detroit, figured there might be a weapon in the car, and they like hemmed him up over the weekend. He almost lost his job, I believe. Mm-hmm. Like, where I'm like, okay, like I know what this is. You guys aren't slick. It's, oh, black guy with a gun? Now that is suspicious. You know what I mean? White dude with a gun, exercising his Second Amendment right. So, you know, I recognize the game is rigged, but I feel like we're just so, like, we're such enemy territory right now where I'm just like, yo, if it comes down to it, I'd rather have one than not. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I guess I'll just have to live and be in prison then, or live and go to court then, you know, because I just know that our shit isn't protected. Who was the woman in Florida who fired two shots into, like, the ceiling?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, fucking almost got, like, 10 years.
Right. Like, it's just, I know what the game is. Like, our shit ain't protected. Like, we might be exercising our rights, but our right ain't protected. Like, shit ain't slick. It was never designed for us. These guns. So it's revolutionary for black people to go out and get guns.
The law here in Michigan to get your concealed carry permit includes, like, so many hours of range time, so many hours of, like, in classroom time, and 3 hours of legal consultant time, which I guarantee you is, like, what you need to say is you feared for your life, and then you kill them. And then you say you feared for your life and you kill him again. You know, like,
yeah,
3 hours.
I talked about Chicago and it was like they had, you can get a permit, but then there's like certain things that just are prohibitive to black people. Mm. Like, oh, you need to go to this office. You need to spend this amount of money. You need to be here. It's like, oh, okay. You know, like, oh, and these offices just happen to be where no black people are, you know, like just certain shit like that where you're like, okay. So even if a black person is trying to do something legal, the right way, quote unquote, you motherfuckers make it as difficult as possible. Like, how I'm supposed to catch the bus 3 hours to go get this permit, and then I also have to be at the other part of the office by the end of the day or whatever the catch is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
spend a lot of money. Like, a lot of this stuff is cost prohibitive, which they don't say either. And I, you know, it's personally designed like
that. It's a privilege to be able to have one, and I definitely understand exercising that privilege because, you know, man, I mean, I'm not really a pro gun person, but I just understand how people are feeling now. You know, like black people specifically, we have reason to feel that way. But so, you know, a lot of people do. Muslim people.
We had our house, it's been a in-depth, serious conversation. And my stance has been, I would say, pre-2-4. Like, generally, I would prefer not to have a gun in the house. I don't think it's necessarily like the greatest thing. Like, I think it's more odds that it'll get used against you, or there's like a domestic issue. Like, I don't think that's something that we need and want. And now it's like, I can't deny Leslie the right and the desire to feel and protect herself. And, you know, I just like it was something that we had to kind of like discuss and come to terms with, but I can't say no. Like, my desire to not have a gun doesn't supersede my desire for her to feel comfortable and safe navigating the world today, you know? And
racism
has
been emboldened.
Yeah.
Like, since he took office, hate crimes have gone up, man. Like,
right.
This is no joke. Like, unlike the very overhyped white fear in this country, where there's like white people walk around thinking they're like the most under attack people in the world, and you're like, what? Like, what? Where is this coming from? Like, black people really do have reason to feel this way, and to quote unquote give in to that paranoia and get a weapon. Like, it's real. It's not bullshit for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, I'll say for ladies listening to the John, the Smith & Wesson M&P Bodyguard 380 Crimson Trace. It's a compact polymer pistol, less than a pound, right in your purse. Six rounds, I think one in the chamber, built in laser.
You know what I say? Pew pew.
I know you want a Glock, but I think
gotta,
a three.
Gotta watch your mouth. Gotta watch your mouth around that, Drew. No. I think that's time. I think that's what we really learned today.
No, we gotta. In fact, if there was a gun, it would definitely have a trigger lock, and I certainly wouldn't have the key.
No, nope.
It was like if there was like a code and shit, that wouldn't be me. Mm-mm. I don't
need forget it anyway. So
guns and me, like not that I would like use it. Like I'd be the guy that like shoots himself in the foot cleaning it. Like yeah, literally, that'd be me.
That would
like,
definitely
like,
be
like, oh, he shot the dog. Like, oh my god, I can't get that man.
It's funny that all the people that should own guns are all the people that don't want one.
Right, because that's literally me. Now, one thing, I don't want to own one, but I do want to learn how to shoot one. Like, my goal is to actually go to a shooting range to actually shoot a gun and feel comfortable around a gun.
Mm.
But I've always been petrified of guns because, my mind is like, guns equal death. All right, so that means I don't want death around me. Okay, cool. Like, that's how my mind always functioned.
That's not a horrible way of being, but I would, if you want, I would say go to a range. Then you can do like, they usually have a 30-minute little sit down where they'll kind of show you a few things, and the instructor will take you and show you how to fire it, and then they'll give you a magazine and a bunch of rounds to shoot at a target. And it'll make you more comfortable with guns and seeing guns and stuff. You know, that's not a bad thing.
Being I'm gonna bring that. I'm gonna bring that dog target like it matters.
I said that to Leslie. Dude. Shut up. There's a gun. There's literally here in Grandpa's. There's like a Mr. Gun place that's huge. It's got like targets and ranges, and like it's always packed. There's like 50 people there all the damn time.
But you can buy guns at Walmart here.
You can. But that's, I said, crazy. To Leslie, we got to do that, but with like something much like worse, like just like white people or something really fucking ridiculous. To
white people, not white people.
Bring it to the range. Be like, bah, 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 bah.
Cheese. Yeah, that's good.
Like a cutout of just like Tom Brady. No. You know what I mean?
Just like Taylor Swift. That would be the one.
Like,
Taylor
shooting Swift. Taylor Swift targets.
Not Taylor Swift.
Right.
Fucking DVDs of fucking like what's that? Enchanted, right? Like something.
Chumbawamba. Anyways, yeah. I came across this thing I thought Karen might appreciate it because it's 29 things all late 90s teen girls desperately wanted for Christmas.
All right.
So we'll see if you remember any of these, Karen. So one was a TV with a built-in VCR for your bedroom.
Yes, bitch. Yes, the combo. And I got one too, honey. And I would play videos all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I had one in college. I had that was the first like TV I got for myself, was this little one just like that for our college bedroom. And I remember everybody had like bootleg deaf comedy jam VHSs. And that's what we all passed around all the time.
You couldn't tell me shit.
Nothing. Let's see, Titanic on VHS.
Now, for me, that would be a no. I went to the movies to see Titanic. I was like, this bitch is long as fuck about some white folks.
Mm-hmm. A collection of Gap perfumes. Gap was the perfect day scent. Heaven, grass, dream. Dream was my shit, though. That was the one I liked. The dream one. Number five, Pashminas. But people still wear Pashminas now. That's a dumb one. A Tamagotchi. Did you have one of those, Karen?
No, that's the one where, let me see, was it like a
little digital pet?
Right. No, I never had that.
This one really got me. The Bath and Body Works body splashes.
They don't make those no more?
Yes. When they have a good one on sale, the 4 for $20.
The 4 for $20.
Or the 5 for $25.
Yes. These are the Plumeria, sun-ripened raspberry, and peach. Oh,
you used
wow.
to have Plumeria.
I know. Plumeria was my shit.
That was your thing.
It was.
I think they still make those body splashes, though, don't they?
They do, but not Plumeria.
They do, but what makes me mad is that you get one that you like, and then they always changing the smells up so often that a lot of times what you end up liking end up not being available anymore.
And not just the smells. They had, like, first they used to do this one, like, foaming body, like, you know, like soap, like you'd foam it into the puffy thing in the bath, you know? I don't know what you got, like foaming soap. And they got rid of that line entirely. It came in like a metal can. Maybe it was like cost prohibitive, whatever. So I'm like, okay, fine. You got rid of the foaming like metal can thing. Like, I'll fucking deal with it. Then they had that like spa line where they had like some scrubs in it. And it was pretty good, but like it went away and then it came back and was twice as fucking expensive. Yeah. It was like, it went from $10 to $20. I was like, you gotta be shitting me.
I always think that they don't source their stuff very like... not sustainably, but like morally.
For growth?
No, like they get it real like shadedly. Oh, and so palm seed all of a sudden they run out of something. It's like, nope, we can't sell that anymore. I don't know. That always seems shady to me. Let's see what else is here. Pastel rice paper lanterns. You know those circular lanterns that are made out of the paper, Karen, that you hang? I had those.
No, I never had those.
No, I had one of those with the, you put the candle and it would like spin around. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I didn't have the candle. That sounds like the white version.
Oh, yeah.
Aha! let's see. What are the other ones here? Oh, the TI-83 calculator.
Oh.
Yes, because it was a requirement. Goddamn, $100, $200 calculator that you only use for your upper, for one statistic class in high school.
I remember my mom was so mad. She was like, it's a calculator? It costs how much now? And it was like, it was one of those first expenses for school that it was like, no, you have to get it. Like, there's no choice.
It wasn't an option. And you can't put it on layaway and you need it on the first day of class.
I might be a little bit.
Yeah, the TI-85. Well, if you could swing that.
Yeah, I might be older, but I remember like when I got it, I was like, wait a minute. We just fucking like learned and memorized like all these like quadratic equations, all these fucking formulas. Now it's like a button. Like that's kind of like now it's just like input A, B, and C, and they're like, you press a button. But why did I learn all this shit?
Right, for a goddamn sine and cosine. Yeah. I don't know about that. That don't mean nothing in real life.
That should have been the first clue that, you know, that computers are going to wipe out everything.
It's true.
Well, and like they tell you, like, oh, you're going to use this later. You're like, no. How about you fucking taught me like simple interest on a credit card and like a mortgage payment? Don't fucking teach me the quadratic equation.
Teach me basic accounting.
But in that same vein, some of us needed those advanced math classes and stuff because we were bored. So, you know, I get it. You know, I just wish that they didn't teach us that and then give us a calculator that did all that shit so I could forget it.
That's my point.
You know what I mean? It was just like, learn this shit. All right, now look, hit these two buttons. There it does it for you.
You're good.
I literally dropped out of school because, like, I was memorizing shit and spitting it back. And, like, half of it I've forgotten. I knew that was going to happen at the time. Like, the way I was memorizing it to get grades on tests was just like, this is stupid. Like, I'm learning the skill is how to parrot the professor's commentary. How is that fucking like learning anything? I'm not learning it. And I knew at the time, I'm like, I'm not going to remember this in 20 years.
Well, let me ask you this.
20 years later, I know nothing.
Were your professors white men?
I had some women, but all white.
No, see, no, well, that's what they were teaching you, how to pair back what white people say.
I mean,
that's a skill.
I guess.
Society values it very highly.
Yeah, I didn't.
But yeah, and in that process, you, downplay critical thinking skills because a lot of times you emphasize on regurgitating that you're not actually learning. You're just regurgitating what you've been told.
Totally. Absolutely. I remember like in certain instances, people like critical thinking was like, no, you're no. I'm right. Let's go on.
Absolutely. The last one I want to mention was, of course, the Sony Discman.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. I had one.
Lord, you couldn't tell me nothing with my Discman.
How long before the battery only lasted 6 minutes?
No, the best was you. It was allegedly portable, but you really couldn't move it that much. So you had to like.
Better not, because it was Skip.
It was Skip.
You had to get the one with Skip protection.
Yeah.
And it still was Skip sometimes.
Right.
I had a good one that had like a 6-second like memory. Like it would record, you know what I'm saying? So the Skip protection was good. But I'm for real. Like the lithium ion battery, you'd charge the thing. You know, like first day out the door, it would last like 2 hours. And then that was it. It went, like a month later, it was lasting like 6 minutes. Like, the fuck? This thing sucks.
Plus, you never really get the Sony one. Well, I never really got the Sony one anyway. It was always like Toshiba or like, you know, some off brand had way more functionality for way less money.
Mm-hmm. So my mom, my mom's claim to fame was human resource management for Japanese firms here in the United States. She worked for all of them, Toshiba, Sanyo, Nissan, all sorts of them. And every time she worked for one, we'd get their equipment at like, you know, like whatever cost, like usually free or like dirt ass cheap. But the best one was definitely Sony. They had at least when she was getting Sony equipment, I was the happiest. But yeah, we got some crazy shit.
Mm-hmm.
I always had like when she was working at Sanyo Fisher, which was like not when Sanyo Fisher, like Sanyo Fisher wasn't like the bomb when she was. I don't know if it's still not like.
I think it's still not.
I don't know where they're categorized, but Sanyo Fisher, like you'd get in my car and be like, "Man, this is a pimped ass stereo from Sanyo." Oh, okay. Oh man, that's a really sweet 24 disc CD from Sanyo. Oh, cool. Sanyo.
Hilarious. So few TV, movie, books, games type thing. Have you guys seen Fences? I don't want to talk too much about it if you haven't.
Yeah, we saw it.
Whew. I'll assume you liked it.
I'm sorry, are we skipping that other?
I loved it.
Are we skipping that last piece?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. Did you know there's no links there because I was like, no, I'm not talking about that.
All right.
Like I said, I'm assuming you guys liked it. I'm still kind of dissecting it a little bit, like in my head. I don't know.
Yeah, I saw you say you had to like process it or something. What was going on, man?
Yeah, just, you know, there were so many layers there. And like the more I talked about it with someone, especially like talking about Rose, the character Rose, just thinking about the nuance and the intricacies of this decision she had to make in her life and the revelations they showed her, you know, expressing in the movie. The first time I saw this play, I remember being like, oh, I wish that somebody had wrote a companion piece that was all from Rose's point of view, because it would be so interesting to see the, you know, I feel like you got so much of a good understanding of the internal workings of Troy. And so, yeah, just thinking about all of that and just the complexities of like how supremacy has etched itself into our familial relationships as Black people. I don't know. It's a lot. That's what I'm processing all of that.
We reviewed it on on Spoiler Movie Reviews, and like it was one of those ones where like I thought maybe it would take 10 to 20 minutes to review it, and it took an hour because you know within that hour we started talking about our own families and the men in our families and the stories and the pain. Say what, Karen?
I said some of the women in our family.
Yeah, and the story and the pain. You know, that movie in a large part, while it's it like I think the only knock, quote unquote, I guess, and it's not really a knock, but the only thing I felt was kind of incomplete was watching like Viola Davis, getting more Viola Davis's background. Like you don't really get that.
Yeah.
And she kind of says like, I didn't want my family to be like my family growing up where none of us had the same mothers and shit like that. And how prevalent that was with her. And here she is like falling into that same thing. And how much of it was about cycles and how much we're kind of not necessarily doomed, but just kind of like pushed into repeating them. And it's so real because I have those experiences. And I loved it because it was so black that I'd never felt the idea of, well, what about the white gaze on this? Cause, that happens a lot with, certain things where like, I'll be taken out of the moment. Cause I'm like, and what message are we really putting out there for white folks? Like we don't fucking have dads and shit or like, you know, like sometimes that happens where you can't help it, you know, that's this country. But, it was so black and I just was like, okay, this is real conversations that I have in my family.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm okay with this being out here in the public, because this is for us and our stories deserve to be told. And I love how unflinching it was, and it didn't really paint Troy as like a hero,
right,
or even a sympathetic figure of like, well, he's just a flawed man and he just need to get his. It's like people could view him that way, but the film never pitched him that way. Like, mm-hmm, I was able to walk out of there and be like, yo, Troy was pretty fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the world fucked him up, but he passed that pain right on down to other people.
Yeah. I mean, he chose, right? He didn't choose her, right? Like, when pressed, he's like,
he made choices, and while they were able to explain, like, have understanding about the choices, right? Like, he's with this other woman because he gets to feel like he can be a man and be happy and over there. And, you know, he looks down on his son because he essentially had a fucked up upbringing of his own. And that's what he thinks manhood is. And that's what he thinks you should pass to your kid, is this fucking, like, this stalwart version of, like, discipline and anger and fear, because that's, he feared his father, you know, like. It's that kind of shit where you're like, man, breaking that cycle is so tough on people, but it's so necessary. You know, one of the reasons I look up to my father as a hero is knowing his background, you know, with his own father and the issues he had. You know, he essentially had to, like, fight his father off his mom at one point to and then his father left the home and didn't come back. And he was, I think my father was 14 when it happened. So for him to be such an amazing father to me, to mitigate the damage done to him, is just is such a feat that I'll always be in awe of, you know what I mean? Because I just know so many people that didn't do it. They then were like, and I ain't gonna be shit either. What, like, I ain't raising my kids, my daddy didn't raise me. And so you know, while some people feel like that's the bare minimum and shit, I feel like it's an awesome thing, an example of manhood to pass down, and why I have such undying respect for him. And with the Troy thing, I feel like you see more of what normally happens, which is this compromise between, I've been hurt, so I'm the real victim, and everyone here needs to recognize me as the greatest, and you guys ain't, you know, you guys are all feasting off of me. As opposed to, I'm a victim of some things, but I'm not going to be that to y'all. I'm going to be different. I'm going to be a provider. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to make the selfish choice. I'm not going to abuse you guys. Like, I'm not trying to rule my house by fear. Like, it's that kind of shit that it seems so tough for people to make that decision, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also, I think for me, one of the things that I really, really loved about this movie, and when we talked about it, it was not centered around whiteness. Mm-mm. White people were kind of an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing I love, because you rarely, rarely get a movie about us where a white person doesn't come in and be the save a Negro, or the magical white person, or the person that, you know, you go to and they just give that Negro that chance or confidence boost or whatever. It was like, no, y'all are like trees on the wildflowers where everybody know you're there, but it ain't about you.
This has actually been a good year for that.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think the movie, you know, when you say it was so black, and there's only like one speaking white part, was the one person that called him into the office.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, it's the only white person that speaks, which is also in the play. But I feel like that's real life. You know, we're segregated as a society, and certainly in 1955, we were extra segregated as a society. So it's perfectly not just believable, but it's very much like, if you're showing a slice of life about black people, they interact with white folks at work. And other than that, they are only around them, their own communities in this moment. And I also loved the, you know, Troy telling the story of his own piece of the Great Migration from South to North, and all that he kind of went through, and all through going to jail and everything. And, you know, people talk about the decision to leave the South because it was so hard, or you know, the financial constraints and the real dangers, and still the outcomes weren't always so great, because you still see that the circumstances that we as Black people have been forced to live in this country are always in jeopardy at any moment. So I loved all of it. I just thought the movie was so well done, and such a great representation of, you know, a piece of classic American theater that has never gotten its true due. You know, people should be reading this play in high school, and they don't. You know, that's really like...
I had not heard about this until, like, very recently. Like,
I didn't even know it was a play.
That, right. And then hearing Nick Jew and Reggie talk on What's the Tea about theater is when I first was like, oh, okay, what is this? Never taught to me in school. You know, not even during Black History Month. Like... Mm-hmm. Our art is just not respected the way that it could be, and we're just not given a foothold that we deserve.
That's true. And I think for me, I've never seen a play. So when I watched the movie, like I probably like a lot of other people in the theater, you could tell by some of their responses to things that was happening. It was the first time I was hearing it. So I was looking at the screen like, bitch, what? Like, and we had a lot of Black people in the theater.
And I'm sitting up here like, this was written when?
Right.
Because some of this shit is so relevant to, like, today.
It's right. True.
You know what I mean? Like, it's such an examination of the male privilege in a Black household. It's such an examination of, you know, oppression as a constant and not a event. You know, like, these movies typically set back then. There's always, like, this... Like, and then there was this event where he whistled at a white woman, or, you know, and then they came in and kidnapped his daughter, or, you know, just some kind of moment. And this doesn't have a moment. It's just kind of like, yeah, well, they talk about like shopping at the AP and getting treated like shit, or going to the local Black market where, you know, things might be overpriced because, hey, you only serve Black people.
And what they don't tell you is that they probably had to pay more for the product because they're Black, so they're going to have to charge you
It's
more.
A very real conversation, though, that I can imagine a Black household at the time having that, you know, felt so natural, as opposed to, you know, some of the movies where you pitch these kind of, like, movies in this background, and it's like, well, what white person are you going to cast to, like, really make people go see this? Like, hey, when's Brad Pitt gonna come in and say these niggas are people? Because if that don't happen, I don't know if Disney can give you the budget, Denzel. Sorry.
I mean, to that to your point, this is a $25 million movie. It's not cheap. It's got big names. It did open up wide release Christmas Day, so not very long, but it's made, I think it did good, like $6 million Christmas Day, which is one of among the better Christmas Day openings, but it's maybe like $11 or $12 million so far, and by comparison, that's about the same that Joy did, which ended up around $56 million domestic. So maybe this is on path to a $50 to $60 million gross on a $25 million movie. I don't think that makes it a huge smash, but do you, like, I'm like, so for me, I enjoyed it thoroughly, but a lot of the themes and things that you're talking about, I recognized and I enjoyed, but I didn't have the same affinity and sort of like there are, you know, like there's some folk in my family I can relate, like, okay, this, but it's not the same for me, you, or Leslie or Karen. And so I recognize that, but I wonder if white, and I've talked to other people who have said white people have responded by saying they were a little bit bored. They thought it was too dialogue heavy, kind of slow. They're not thinking it's a play. They're thinking like, I don't know. It's like, whatever. But so,
he says the N word like 57 times to start the film. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, right away, you know, right away, white people going to feel a little uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I won't lie. I'm sure I'm somewhat biased. You know what I mean? Like, if the motherfucker would be an 8 to just some random white critic, that shit's like a 37 to me, because it was just like speaking to my soul.
Right.
And we don't get that experience enough. Mm-hmm. So I have no shame in that. But, you know, I don't expect white people to be a great judge of this. And I also think it won't really compare to Joy, because the difference with Joy is Joy still has that white narrative and the white critics and stuff that go through and like, you guys have to see this, because they root for these movies and they explain these movies to their core audience as like, she's going to get an Oscar, guys. So you need to see this. And they don't really pitch Fences that way, even though it's so fucking obvious Viola Davis got gonna win a, if she don't win an Oscar, man. Yeah,
I seriously just fuck the Oscars if she don't
and,
win an Oscar.
And just right. Like, sidebar,
shit down or down, she don't win. We burning it down, dog.
Sidebar, Joy was the most boring as fuck movie ever. So Joy boring. Was like literally it ended, and I remember saying to Leslie like, "What was the point?"
They love white women.
Ain't that the one about the vacuum cleaner,
the mop, yeah, whatever.
Which one? The mop. Fuck.
Yeah, I didn't even go see that bullshit.
It was awful. It was just take the beginning, the middle, the end, and then you're like, why? I don't know. Because then Rod, because they love white women. That's why that movie got made.
They love white women, man.
They love white women.
What's the chick that was in Passengers, Karen? The wooden actress. You know what I'm talking
Jennifer.
About?
Yes.
She was in Hunger Games.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Yes. Jennifer,
she's a, like, they love her. Yeah, white love people her. Don't root for performances as much as they root for people. And that's true. Why you see the same, like...
Yeah.
Three or four white
yeah,
women.
Yeah, it's like 15 minutes ago, it was Natalie Portman. Then it was, I don't know, Shailene Woodward. And now it's this one.
She's the one that had the whole disrespect for the Hawaiian culture and the rocks.
Yeah, that's
and
her.
Yeah, and people are like.
Somebody tried to tell me on Twitter because I was like, well, you know, they fucking love them some, the woman that Drew just said. And then she was like, yeah, well, I think white people about to get her out of here. I was like. For what? And she was like, she disrespecting the Hawaiian thing. I was like, white people do not care about that.
They don't give a shit about that.
Nope. Yeah. Try again.
Get her out of here for that. It ain't that, dog. No. She got to come out and say Black Lives Matter. She want white people to get her out of here.
Yeah. Right. Or just not be attractive anymore. They're very happy to get rid of you, man.
Yeah, can you just
be 32 and
she's
you
attractive
done.
Now?
You know what I'm saying. I'm just saying be older. Be an older woman. She's out of there. It's TikTok time anyways for her. So why would they care what the fuck she does? Yeah. They don't care.
She's 30 going on 50.
Right at that edge of you're still cute, but you're older. You might get trapped in that mom phase mm-hmm. where these are the few roles mm-hmm. that you can play. She's kind of in that area. And I think for me, when it comes to fences, most of everything we consume, particularly in media, is all white. Mm. So y'all got a plethora of shit to pick from, white folks. So go watch that shit.
Yeah, but when our shit is excellent, though, it just deserves a recognition. I can't, like, and I'm not even being delusional. I'm only caping for Viola out this piece. Like, I think everybody else did a good job. But Viola's just a show stealer. If she don't win Best Supporting, I just can't imagine.
But that's not
what sort of performance someone would have to beat her.
Yeah, right? I'm with you, Karen. That snot bubble scene. Come on, like for real,
I
for
think
real.
She literally has no mucus membrane. I think she had a surgery to enhance her acting ability, where she had her mucus membrane removed so that she can snot cry on demand, and It's really like the Patriots deflating footballs when it comes to acting, because Viola just can pull that out at any moment.
I think you've just created a new... So Letty Mae has the lip school acting, and mm-hmm. Viola Davis must have the mucous membrane school of acting. Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. to go back to August Wilson, and just... I like to just... You know, people that aren't as familiar. You know, he wrote... It's either called the Pittsburgh series or the Century series. So it's 10 plays that he wrote that depicted Black life in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, through the entire 20th century. So he has one per decade. Fences is the one from the 1950s, but he has one from the 1900s, 1910s, 20s, 30s, all the way through to 1990s. Some of them you probably heard of, like The Piano Lesson, which is the one from the 1930s, or Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which is from the 20s. Jitney is from the 70s. That's another pretty popular one. But the really amazing news is that Denzel has been given Denzel Washington. You know, I call him Denzel because we close like that. Denzel has been given by the August Wilson's estate the opportunity to, and HBO has partnered with him. And every year for the next 9 years, he will be directing one of the Century plays for HBO. So we're going to actually get to see all 10 of August plays done. And I'm really excited about it. This will be the only one that Denzel will star in, according to him. So the others will have lots of amazing black actors.
Are they going to be released in theater or all of them going to stream
HBO? They're going to all be in HBO. So I think Fences is probably the only one that would be, I would say, the wide appeal, because it really, it won a Pulitzer Prize. It won a Tony Award. It was huge. Really huge. So I don't think any of the other ones would be able to. Maybe The Piano Lesson, if they, because if, they don't have to do them in order. It's not the same characters. It's just kind of like slice of life of black people, but only, but in Pittsburgh. So I'm excited. I think it's going to be some amazing black art that most people haven't been exposed to. And you know, August Wilson really, I mean, he finished Radio Golf, just, which is the 90s one, just like right before he died. So it's pretty, pretty cool.
I'm excited too, man. I think he got, Denzel got caught slipping on one of his answers this weekend.
Yeah, I saw
about
that.
Viola Davis and colorism in Hollywood. But at the same time, I think it'll be good in his hands, because I think him as a director, a decision maker, he's very committed to getting young black actors a chance, and he's responsible for a lot of people's careers. And I that's one thing I never doubt about him. Like, I think his answer was kind of some bullshit, but his, you know, having this in his hands to me does feel like, okay, cool, this is progress. Like, let's get some people, let's get some names out there, Denzel.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, the reason why they're so good in this, they performed this play on Broadway, Denzel and Viola in these exact roles. Denzel won a Tony for Best Actor. It won Best Revival of a Play, and Viola won for Best Actress in a Play that year, 2010. So, I mean, this is them at the, like, you know, and these are two classically trained, like, serious actors. Take away the black or not, like Denzel and Viola, they're serious about this craft. And it was exciting for me to watch them, you know, really get to do the things that their white counterparts that they have to, like, deign to even be in the same scene with could never do, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that chick that plays Bonnie on How to Get Away with Murder, she can't do that.
Right.
She can't do that.
I just love the idea, too, that, you know, Denzel put on weight to do this role.
Yes.
Yeah, he looked weird.
Like, I can't question his commitment. It's just, I've grown up with Denzel, so Denzel can only be Denzel to me. You know what I mean? Yes. So it's like, even as he's like taking on this character, I'm like, oh man, Denzel, this is like if Denzel put on weight and was born in the 20s or whatever. Like, it's still Denzel to me.
It's still Denzel to you.
Like, even when he's doing like that speech that's in the trailer with the like you. Hey, like, I just, like, I'm just like, oh, Denzel, get on it.
I love Denzel, and I'm just asking legitimate. I apologize if this is framed by supremacy in some way, but, like, he got caps.
Maybe you should stop if that's your, if that's your caveat. Maybe.
I'm just asking, with the teeth, I'd be like, maybe frame it right, but, like, did he get caps?
I don't know.
Oh, for his teeth?
Yeah. Is something different?
I don't know. One, I don't know how that would be framed by supremacy.
Drew just want to put it out there for everything.
It's a blanket. It's a blanket.
I don't want this to be some famous supremacy.
Is fucked up,
but I'll take the pancakes with bacon.
I don't want this in white supremacy, but I love the color yellow.
That might be the name of the episode: White Supremacist Pancakes and Bacon.
I don't know what's up with his teeth, man. He just always had some big ass teeth. They do look bigger now.
They might have.
Yeah. You know.
Were you saying that because they're extra white or something?
No, like the Uncle Denzel stage. Like this recent, like the last, like, I don't know, so many years. Like something, I don't know what it is.
Nah, I've noticed it too. I just haven't like really thought about it much. But yeah, I was like, did he have something done to his teeth?
I shouldn't talk. I'm 43, and like another 10 years, I'm going to have fake choppers. It'll be all
You know what? Before and after, celebrities who've had their fake teeth fixed.
It's the truth. Cardi B just had her fixed.
Looking at his old teeth. Yeah, he had like a gap. Okay.
But it wasn't bad. I don't think it looked bad.
No. You don't know the picture I'm talking about. Let me he definitely would not have been seen as.
All right, listen, I'm looking. I got you. I'm seeing this picture.
Like, sex symbol Denzel couldn't have made it like this.
But the gap is kind of. I'm here for the gap.
Yeah, you say that. I feel like hundreds of millions of dollars beg to differ.
Begs to differ.
Okay.
Yeah, begs like that's what differ. Denzel need to be saying. We talking about colorism.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Especially because right. that quote was about like his daughter coming to him and he was like, you know, let those pretty girls do whatever. I'm like, or you could talk about how you've literally had cosmetic work done so that you look attractive up on the big screen too, but I digress.
You know, the problem with Denzel is that he's at that age where he's old and black now. And I feel like even interviewers don't want none.
Mm-mm.
You know, like that, like it's like he just at that age where like the follow up question ain't coming.
Yeah. You know, they're like, okay, you said that. Thanks.
Yes. Like, I forget who it was. When they interview him about the meme.
Oh, he was so salty.
Yeah.
He was real salty.
He wasn't happy about that.
He was like, people don't understand. They need to think about it before they talk about me. I was like, okay.
What you got in your pocket? I'm like, damn, dog, you went complete old black man.
He didn't talk about Air Jordans, did he?
No, he didn't talk about Air Jordans.
He's like, he was a minute away from being like, not putting on Air Jordans. How about you go to school? Pull your pants up, huh?
Oh, call
that
pound cake.
Yeah, I was gonna say call that going pound cake.
Yeah, going
he was a minute away from full pound cake.
Full pound cake.
Yeah, I feel like we need to. I've been thinking about this, and I don't. I'm just workshopping this with you guys. I feel like we need to come up with another. Like, we need to come up with levels for respectability politics, right? Because there's like. Cause it's such a it's a catch all, but now it's becoming like overused.
Yes,
and is not as destructive on some levels. Like Mr. Pull Your Pants Up or the kids wear skinny jeans is not as dangerous as Mr. What About Black on Black Crime?
Yes,
but it's both called respectability. I need a name like for the folksy respectability where I can go. And shut your old ass up and just keep moving. Aww. And the, you know, like Ben Carson, you know, respectability where I'm like, dude, you're going to get someone killed. And that's not okay. You know, I gotta figure something out because some of this shit is dangerous and some of it's just like annoying.
It's like it should be like a threat level. So it would be like threat level Fred Sanford, right? Threat level Fred Sanford would be the lowest one.
We got a respectability yellow guy, yes. Old man who says yes. These kids yes. Stop listening to all that hippity hop.
Yes. Exactly. Yes.
Oh, hippity hop.
Got a hotep on the scene.
Right. Respectability red, hotep B.
Hotep B, that's exactly right. That's exactly it.
Umar Johnson's the respectability red.
Yes. Oh my God.
Oh, listen.
Yeah, this guy said if you don't wear those clothes, you're
gonna get paid. We got a respectability lotion alert. Pull out all the bottles of lotion in me. We need a lotion.
Guys, that's the scale. Moisturization level. Yes. Listen, that's the scale, Karen.
How ashy
is
the respectability?
That's the scale.
You know, we better be careful. We're gonna get somebody to have like a 45-minute YouTube response video. By talking about him.
You a clown. You a clown. You a clown. You a midget.
Short.
What?
You think they would make it this far in? I don't know. I feel like we're safe.
Yeah.
Like they turned this off a long
time. What hour 42? We good. We good.
I know I couldn't make it through their whole video.
Even when they're about you.
We need 2 minutes of African drum solos just to start this
just
bad boy.
And like the most ridiculous pictures. And they put that shit in the middle of the videos too, like commercials in the middle of the videos. I'm like, what is going on here?
Have you seen the one with the phone call where Dr. Umar Johnson supposedly takes a phone call?
No, I haven't seen that one.
You're going to die.
I'm writing it down. Mark,
but like the phone quote unquote rings, and he looks at it and puts it down like he doesn't answer it. Right. Then he picks the phone back up. And he puts it to his ear and he's like, yeah, yeah, we're going to take care of him. Yeah, yeah, I got that handle. And in the middle of this fake phone call, the phone rings. And once the phone rings, he actually puts the phone down. Me and Justin were watching today for the pregame. I was like, I can't. Did you see that? I can't believe
it. Put that up there? Didn't edit that out?
That was my first, literally, Drew, the damn. First word out of my mouth was, why didn't he just edit that out? Idiot. And I cannot believe these people are going around talking to people and people are paying for it. Just
I don't know what happened. I have a lot of people I follow that are black, and I saw a bunch of stuff going on. I'm like, I guess I don't know what this is. I have to figure, like, I'll watch this. I ended up going down the rabbit hole, and I was like, it was like 9 something in the morning. It was real early. I'm drinking my coffee, and I'm like, Leslie, what is this? I don't know what's going on. And I think you called it the
Hotep Civil Wars.
It is.
I said, Hotep Civil Wars have begun, and it's Kwanzaa. Look around. Look around. How lucky we are to be alive.
What about Umoja,
right,
God?
I am the Hotep, and the Hotep is with me.
That's the name of the episode.
Got the Hotep Wars have.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what we need, a Hotep Yoda.
Yeah. to your Hotep training. Don't respect the hoes. Don't respect them at all.
Menstruate, you will not.
Be sure you have a lot of alkaline in your system, yes.
Misogyny is the craft to the Hotep side.
Yes, that's exactly right. Hotep Yoda will be preaching about the dark side, black feminism. That's what it would be.
Misogyny needs to anger. Anger leads to hate.
Oh, Lord.
How are you going to segue from that into Great American Bake Off?
I don't know if I can. I don't think I can.
What's the segue?
Did you hear my sigh? I was like, huh,
Speaking of Hotep Yoda, we've been watching this show called Great American Bake Off. It's fucking hilarious where they make these awesome shit. It's really freaking great.
I love Great American Bake Off, for the record. It's very good. Everybody should
watch it. You bake, that's why.
I bake.
And it's cute. And I love Mary and what's the...
Johnny.
No, the couple. But the couple that are married. Nia Vardalos and her husband.
Her husband's name is. Yeah. So speaking of Denzel movies, we watched The Magnificent Seven yesterday.
Oh my God. And we had
a technical question for you, first of all, Rod. Is that an Impossible White Man movie or not?
No, because they die.
But Denzel doesn't.
It's just a Western. Denzel lives, but.
So is he an Impossible White Man?
No.
His character as an individual, I guess you could say he's an Impossible White Man because he doesn't die, and he does pull off some amazing action feats and whatnot. But if I was rating it as an Impossible White Man character, he'd be lower on the scale because he just has a lot less action stuff to do. He doesn't, you know, because he's older.
Right.
That's actually why there's so many other motherfuckers in that film. Young people do shit like fall from 50 stories and get back up. This old ass ain't doing that shit.
And I don't know if you remember, but in fact, when Leslie asked me, I go, oh yeah, I don't know if we'll have to ask Rod if this is a Impossible White Man movie, but black people can be Impossible White Man. I know this because I got in a Twitter argument with Rod, and his response was, are you going to fucking tell me, the guy that created this, about Impossible, like what the rules are for Impossible White Man? And I was like, no, touche.
I'm not going to
do that. Yeah, it's weird because people will start like trying to rationalize it out. And because, you know, our society has conditioned us where we're like, well, race is the number one thing we see. And I'm like, well, this is funny. We just call it Impossible White Man, but it's all these other factors, right? Mm-hmm. Like people go, Rod, is there any Impossible Black Man movies? I'm like, no. Like, not no. You can just be a black man in an Impossible White Man movie. That genre is really just for straight white dudes to be out doing shit. And it just happened to open up to everybody. But like, an Impossible Black Man movie would be some shit like, I don't know, like
Die Hard.
No, Die Hard's an Impossible White Man movie. An Impossible Black Man movie? Yeah, a Impossible Black Man movie would be some shit like a motherfucking surviving.
Django?
You know what? I'll give you an Impossible Black Man movie. A Time to Kill. That's an Impossible Black Man movie.
Yeah.
That would never happen in real life.
No, you're right. That dude would have been killed immediately.
That motherfucker would
a
not
A cop would have killed him.
Trial. He would have lost the fuck out of that trial. Imagine if he was white. Imagine if that little girl was white. Nigga, please. It'd be like, imagine 12 guilties. Imagine that. So that's an impossible black man movie, something like that, where we just overcome like racism and come out unscathed. Other than that, I don't think we have.
No, the impossible black man movie is where all the white people rally around you and lift you up and save you from the racist people on the plane and everything. Stop. And they're wearing safety pins.
I feel like the new, you know what, that new movie by from Jordan Peele.
Oh, we just see the ad for that. Get Out. Is it Run or what is it called?
I think it's Get Out.
Get Out. Get right. Out. Yeah.
So I'm like, that could it depending on the ending. Might be impossible black man movie. Mm. Like if he can survive all that racism and shit and somehow live, I will consider judging that as impossible black man. Mm. Just overcoming impossible racism. And we'll see if we can open it up. Maybe impossible black man can star black women. Asian people that are dealing with racism.
Spoiler alert, all the white people done Stepforded the entire town. if this one person gets out, okay, but from what I saw, a lot of black people are fucked in that town.
Yeah, they're gonna get fucked.
Definitely.
So I didn't hate Magnificent Seven, but it was like on some level it was so exactly like the other movie. Like, I don't know what you were going to do. Like, what's a remake versus a reimagining? I don't know what the fuck. But to me, it just didn't add anything. It was like, okay, you remade a movie. Whatever. Like, okay.
They what didn't about you, Leslie?
I thought it was predictable. Like, I had missed a bunch of it because I did this like Black Girl Magic thing last night, and I came upstairs and I was like, oh, I was gonna watch that with you. He's like, yeah, I played it. I could tell you what happened. I go, don't bother. I'll know from just 10 seconds of watching it. He's like, no, let me tell you. And then I literally
I go, let me tell you. And you go, all right, so there's some bad guys and they're fighting some good guys and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, you're right.
I go, and there's a girl. What did I miss? Yeah, you're right.
That's the bad one.
I mean, but it was entertaining. I thought the action sequences were really good.
I heard a hangout sound. Was that them? Ooh. Did we lose you? Oh, get him back. Get him back. You can edit this out or leave it in like Umar Johnson. I'll take care of it. Ring, ring. Oh,
God was click. Here. I swear he was. I swear he was here. Well, I messed up. I was saying just that I thought it was just really predictable is all I thought it was. But I really liked the action sequences. I thought they were really cool. Like, all the explosions looked super cool. They did like slow-mo well and all the shooting and stuff. Denzel,
you didn't record again, right?
Yeah, Denzel. No, Jordan didn't.
I'm just making sure we've all right, forgive me.
Denzel's like horseplay, like where he was like going on one side of the horse and he was on the flat side of the horse. Like, all of that was cool. I like that.
I feel like they wanted to hang out in OS and just get away from life for 6 to 8 weeks.
Not D'Onofrio. He did not want to be in that hot ass fur because he was sweating so bad in that movie. I felt bad for him.
And he's literally the only person I think who didn't mail it in.
He looked like
I don't know why he decided that was the movie. He was like, I'm going all to the wall, doing a crazy accent. Why are you talking like that? No one in this is winning an award for anything. Maybe a Razzie. Just leave it alone.
For real, like,
just be easy with it, Vincent.
Rod's dead ass. Everybody showed up to film like Ocean's 12, right? Like the second one. Like,
right,
all like,
ready for Dog Day Afternoon.
Yeah, he was like, he came filming like the Reverend. Like, he was serious, dude.
It was so crazy because like Denzel was wearing like regular ass jeans you could buy at the mall.
and he had
waves. Yeah. You know, ain't no fucking black dude in fucking like 1800s Wild West.
There was no waves then.
Yeah, nobody had fucking S curl or pomade or fucking like brushes, wave brushes. But he was just like being Denzel, you know, in the Old West. And then D'Onofrio comes on set and he's just like, oh, what's going on? What are you doing? I was like, what are you doing, D'Onofrio? Don't you see everyone else is talking like they're not even talking old timey folksy West lingo?
The one character, I swear it was an ad lib, said that bear is wearing clothes.
Chris Pratt is just hanging out.
Literally. He literally was Star Lord. Just basically Star Lord in the Wild West. I was like, oh, okay, cool.
You know,
I think he said dude at one point. I was just like, okay.
I'm 100% sure he did. Like, I'm 100% sure he just was like, dude, chill out or something. And I'm like, I don't even care that this isn't accurate to anything that was happening at the time. But you know what? I didn't mind it, but it felt like just an 80s cliche. Like, they even had the Native American fight the evil Native American.
Yes, like, you're a disgrace.
It was like you could see everything coming 100 miles away, man. And the only thing that was like kind of like good and different was when they added the racism to the part where the dude killed Denzel's family.
Yes.
Part did make me be like, kill his ass. I was like,
kill him. Kill him.
Like, kill the fuck out of him.
Extra motivation.
Yeah, before that, he was just like an evil oil baron or something that I didn't really. It was like, whatever cliche villain. Then it was like, by the way, I hung your sister. I was like, gotta kill him.
Well, and here's another one. I don't always think this, but in this movie particularly, I felt it because there was no anything backstory. But like, we're supposed to believe that Sarsgaard's character is this evil oil baron that's trying to like strip the land for whatever. All these other fucking dudes that he's deputized, like there was like hundreds of fucking dudes that rid out with him. Call him henchmen, right? Like, what is the henchman pay? Like, what? Like, that's a lot of henchmen. Like, what are you going out doing, honey? Oh, we're gonna ride. I'm a henchman. We're gonna do this thing for this other dude. Like, and like they all went like full. Like they was gonna die. Like they went out. Like
there are so many questions I had like this when I was watching the movie, Drew. You're bringing them all up. Like, why wasn't there a number of henchmen that died that made the other henchmen go, we might not win this?
That's what I said.
It starts with 23. It starts with them. Like,
they
seven
dudes showed up and killed like 20 motherfuckers in the city and let one dude live. And other henchmen were like, let's go out there. Like,
and then in the middle of the battle, I kept being like, "What? When do you just as a henchman be like, nah? Because my thing is like, they got there and it's like, okay, they got the Gatling gun, but they don't need that right away. I would just be like, listen, we were told there would be like one Indian, some guns. These motherfuckers got bombs. They got people in trenches. I didn't sign up for this. I just signed up for regular ass henchman duties. And these are above and beyond that.
Listen.
They really had like, what was it? Like, they had like, probably like 100 and something henchmen, but during the last battle, like at least 75 are dead, you know, as they're making the last charge. And I'm like, why aren't the other ones just going, probably not gonna win this?
First explosion, right, where they had the like the hidden like explosion thing, I'd have been done. And then second of all, why does the Sarsgaard character not start with the Gatling gun? Like, what the entire fuck? Like, lead with that.
He shot his own men up. Just shoot up the city and then go in there and kill everyone left.
Yeah. A lot of questions, Ron. Idiot, man. A lot of questions.
And then this other thing. This, I try not to let this bother me, but it bothered the fuck out of me. And this is just being black in America, man. I can't help it. Why was nobody racist?
None of them.
None of them, dude.
Yeah, they got hard stares, but nobody ever came out and said anything. Okay.
And then they had like black women in the town. None of that made no sense. I was like yelling. Yeah.
He walked into that brothel bar and ordered a whiskey like it was no big deal before he had to like pull the gun out. I was waiting for like, what? Like, no. Like, this is not 18,
everybody
whatever.
Like, people were sexist. There were all kinds of sexism in the movie where they're just like, oh, you gonna let a woman shoot? Where I'll be darned, you know what I'm saying? but nobody was like, what's that nigger doing on a horse? You know what I'm saying? Like, get the fuck out of here, man. But you know what? I really do live for these type of movies where a black person just gets to make a shitty ass film because they wanted to. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, so I mean, I shouldn't call it shitty, but clearly not a lot of effort was put into this.
Yeah, this was two guns. What was his other one?
Yeah.
this was two guns.
For the sequel of that
That's
one.
A classic.
What's that called? Four guns?
Yeah. Oh, man. We get four guns?
Oh, I can take that.
I don't know if I'm ready for four guns, dog. They definitely need to consider doing a sequel to that. But, yeah, it's just like these are actually the movies that really mean equality to me. Yep. Is like when this kind of movie makes some money, I'm like, good for y'all, man. Y'all don't really give a fuck.
Leslie has said that to me on numerous occasions. She's like, listen, like my zeitgeist moment for when like things will be different is when this happens. She's like, listen, when black people can be like mediocre and succeed and be total assholes and it be a problem, like no big deal, like just as a normal day life, like the response is like they're dicks and assholes and jerks, like, and that's an okay thing, like that's when we've like succeeded. When are we gonna get there?
You know who's like this emblematic of that right now for me? Will Smith. Like, how many more misses are they gonna let him have?
He'll have all. I think he gets all the misses. I don't think they'll ever be. He's the black person that all white people want to be friends with. and he gets to trade that forever. There's never going to be a time where he's not cooler than them, and so they still want to be his friend, and so they're going to continue.
And don't you kind of, I mean, I don't know how you feel. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I kind of feel like if that goes on forever, I'd be okay with that.
I'm fine. Look, like he put his time in. Yeah. He put his time in. Let him do whatever he wants to do.
He's made billions. Billions.
Yeah, if Andy Garcia still gets to make movies, why can't Will Smith? That's all I'm saying. All of us have up times and down times. We all peak. That's just the natural flow of life. Let him go ahead. Go ahead. Keep making those movies, Will.
Yeah. When Johnny Knoxville is denied a movie, then we can talk about Will Smith.
I went and saw Madea Halloween because I was like, I watched an Adam Sandler movie on Netflix this year, and I owe it to black people to go see our version of Adam Sandler. Like,
and it
was
actually really good.
And I actually did enjoy that movie. Yes, so, you know, it, to be honest, Tyler Perry is actually better than the Adam Sandler version. You know, I always say Adam Sandler's the Jewish Tyler Perry, and I'm like, I don't know. I feel like Tyler got a better resume now. I got to come up with a new analogy on white people that y'all got to stop supporting. But yeah, man, I'm kind of happy about that because it's like, good, man. Our shit should get to be mediocre sometimes, and people should still go see it.
Yeah, isn't that Charlemagne was all like, you know, if you want your own platform, go out and make it. Like Tyler did that. He owns his own entire studio and fucking hires all these people and writes all his shit, and like he owns it like top to bottom. Like you ain't gonna fucking like.
And it's so much more acceptable now because other black people are getting a chance in Hollywood. So there's just so much less pressure on every single black person to represent all of blackness. You know, like there was a time where I feel like even if Fences would have been the black movie that year, people would have been like writing a whole bunch of like, oh, and this makes black people look bad and I don't like this representation. Mm. But now that there's like, you know, 5 excellent black movies this year, it's like, yeah, well, you know, that was one movie. And if you don't like that, go see Moonlight. You know what I mean? Yep. If you don't like that, go see Queen of Conway.
Yeah, there's so
many
options. You
have to see one movie.
It's true. This was a good movie for a good year for black film, for sure. Luckily, because everything else about it sucked. just saying. It was pretty shitty. Let's see. I think that was all we had, Drew. Unless you want to, you didn't see the movie Eddie the Eagle, Roderick and Karen, did you?
Good. Sorry.
Don't.
It's just, oh my God. It's the like, it like, I knew it
but
was
listen, a, it's about this British white dude who decided he wanted to go to the Olympics, and so somehow he did.
I saw the trailer for that. It was the whitest, dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Dumb.
Listen.
But listen, Drew, is he special needs? Because that's what. No, wait.
I'm not trying to laugh.
Don't laugh.
I don't mean to laugh.
Because that's what Chad said to me. Chad's like, oh, yeah, he's special needs. And I was like, he's special needs? I don't think he's special needs.
I don't think he's special needs.
Are y'all
needs.
Sure? Because when I saw the trailer, it looked like Forrest Gump goes skiing.
Listen, it's a little bit like the dude is a little bit like Rudy, you know what I'm saying? Like he's like kind of like smaller and he's not like, you know, like Olympic stature, and he did wear some like Coke bottle glasses, but he wasn't special needs. He was just kind of like, you know, maybe he was on the spectrum, I don't know. But like when I say it was like privileged ass shit, like they just didn't have anybody going. So he's like, well, if I go to the tryouts and I do this thing, then you're going to send me to the Olympics. And they're like, well, no, fuck, you can't just do that. Like, you have to jump a minimum distance. And like, the way he goes about it is just like, it's all just like, because I want to. Mm. And because I want to, he succeeded. And then because he succeeded, and let me put huge air quotes, because he wanted to go to the Olympics, he went to the Olympics and he came in dead last. Like, literally, like, dead ass last. And dead ass last was a British Olympic record. You know, like, that was a success, I guess, but it's just like.
And they made a movie out of that.
Literally. They made a movie
out
of
it. You know what? That'll be equality when Michael T. Williams gets a movie. Because Michael T. Williams been playing the same, like, special needs dude for like 3 or 4 movies. Like he was a Bubba Gump and he was in Fences as like the adorable special needs person. Like when he can get his own movie as that character, that's when we'll be like, okay, you know, we've achieved equality. People will go watch him do the same thing that they'll watch like Hugh Jackman do.
I was telling Leslie about just in terms of like the privilege and how like, you know, white people, we like to gloss over it. But Sports Illustrated had like a huge, like many page article on Theo Epstein and the architect of, you know, both the Red Sox and the Cubs World Series and all this stuff and, you know, sabermetrics and all la la back and forth, like buried, like way in the end was like, oh, you know, right after college while still an undergrad, Epstein took an internship under the Orioles president, Larry Lucchino. Who gets a fucking internship under a goddamn president of baseball operations? Are you fucking kidding me? Like, get the fuck out of here. At like 20 fucking two, like, oh, he took an internship under president of baseball operations, Oreo, luckily. Like, okay, whatever. Like, and I'm not saying he isn't smart and he didn't do this, right, and he didn't do that, but come on. Let's not bury the fucking, like, you know, the entire fucking point of how he got where he's at.
That's, yeah,
conveniently, that's forget.
Conveniently, yeah, that's mighty white of them, as I like to say, for sure. Well, let everybody know. I'm sure they already do, but let's just do it anyway.
Please.
Where they can find you guys and follow you and all of that fun stuff.
You can find everything about us over at theblackguywhotips.com. That's where all our shows can be found. You want to go premium, you can find it there. We're both on social media. At TBGWT is the social media for the show. And my social media is, say that again, that as in DAT. And Roger's social media is at Rodimus Prime.
Lovely. And you, I mean, literally, if you haven't listened to her show, I don't know, you crazy. Definitely listen to it. Go premium. They have the best shows and they're awesome and you get so much content. It's ridiculous and it's all amazing. And thank you guys so much for being on our final show of the year.
Yes.
Just
please clap.
Amazing. And
have a great 2017, man.
Thank you.
I hope special things happen for the safety pin box and all that stuff. And, you know, like I said, I'll be right behind you with the paperclip box.
Yes. Yes.
I'm ready to swoop in.
One-two punch. All the credit.
It'll be a 1-2 punch.
And I have to say, just personally, I haven't laughed this much and had this much fun on our own show no disrespect to other guests.
Hey, listen, you better stop bad-mouthing our guests. Chris was just here last week.
We in the pipe.
No offense, Chris, not as funny as me. You know,
I say
it all the time.
We bring Chris on for the rage, and we bring Rod on for the jokes.
What's in between where he lives and Carolina? What's the Temecula of you two? What's in between? You can have like an interracial John fight.
West Virginia, probably. Yeah.
Meet me in Gatlinburg.
That's Tennessee, babe, but all right.
I don't know. What's West Virginia? What's the city in West Virginia?
You know what? It did sound very West Virginia. It might be Gatlinburg in West Virginia, dog.
There might be one there. You're right.
I'm looking it up right now. But nah, man, y'all shows is always excellent, and it's so good to see y'all doing big and bad, better things and stuff. And I every time I'm on here, man, I can't help but reiterate, man, I didn't think me and Leslie was gonna make it, man.
Oh, look, like at
our first interaction was, you know, it was a little bit controversial, man, but.
We became good friends with people you fell out with first.
That's a lot of my close friends. I don't know what that says about me, for the record. A lot of people that I really come to love and respect, man. We start off on that, like, well, I don't know. Why don't you say? I don't know. And then eventually it's like, you know what? That's a good point. You know, like the cut of your jib. So
yeah.
Thank you so much for having us. And I'm so glad that we was able to maintain this relationship. And, mm-hmm. and Drew, you know, it takes a strong man to let the world, you know, love the woman that you love, man. So it's also a lot to, you know, like, it's cool to see somebody able to, like, kind of play the background sometimes, because, you know, Leslie be gallivanting all over this globe. And, you know, I'm sure the same way I feel about anytime somebody says something about Karen, I'm sure it gets your dander up, but you're able to, like, really you know, be confident about it, man.
Listen,
like,
I'm
proud to know you.
Thank you. Well, I'll tell you, it's real easy. We're married and we're in a 50-50 state. So have it, you know. And she likes to say that she did put the business in her maiden name. She was kind of smart. She made a couple of moves. But I appreciate it.
I mean, are we even married? I don't know.
Yeah, it was in Jamaica.
We did get married overseas.
Well, I think we got that common law time in, but
it's like Obama's birth certificate. Do it really count?
Does it count? I don't know.
And I do appreciate all the nice things you said. I'm gonna remember that when we moved to North Carolina. we'll be knocking on your door.
As a cuck, you're one of the few cucks that I really respect, man. And I appreciate you putting it out. Why wasn't cuck the word? Why wasn't cuck the word of 2016?
It needed to be.
Choose a new word.
Cuck should have been the 2016 word of the year. I don't know how that didn't happen.
Because the person who made the list is a cuck. That's why.
And we're not using it.
Yeah. It's true. Mm. All right, babe.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
High five.